started tonight. Commissioner Dents is going to lead us in the prayer.
Merciful Father, we thank you right now for your goodness and your mercy. We ask you to forgive us for our sins as we forgive those who trespass against us. We ask for your blessing now as we try to conduct the business of this county and the citizens here. We bless you just for being God. And we thank you now for what you've done thus far. And we thank you for what you're going to do in the future. This we do ask and we bless you now. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to welcome everyone this evening to our workshop. I'd like to remind you that we do not vote at a workshop. If there's anything that needs to be voted on, we take it to another regular board meeting. Thank you all for being here this evening. We'll start with number three, the board to discuss emergency management operations. I understand y'all have a PowerPoint.
We do. Of course, you see we have a vacancy. Congratulations, Steve, once again. Steve was fulfilling that role. So I just want to start off. We're all aware that we have a vacancy in the Director of Emergency Management's position. Christy's with us as coordinator, the other employee in that department. Your department is set up under Florida statute, also county ordinances, Florida statute 252. Emergency management powers of political subdivision. Each county emergency management agency created an establishment pursuant to 252.31 shall have a director. The director must meet the minimum training and educational requirements established for the job description. The director shall be appointed by the Board of County Commissioners or the Chief Admin Office of the county as prescribed in Chapter 125. I'll skip down some of this. It goes on to say that county constitutional officer employed. The county constitutional officer may be appointed as director. So it is, your department is set up under state statute. And this is our local code of ordinances that deals with it. We'll go to the next slide if that's okay. Okay. The emergency management goal, Steve provided this. Emergency management goals are to work closely with local authorities, Florida Division of Emergency Management, Federal Emergency Management, and the citizens of Taylor County to be prepared to respond to or recover from any possible hazardous situation which confronts our community. Emergency Management is responsible for performing technical work in the development, implementation, and management of countywide disaster response, recovery, mitigation, risk reduction, prevention, and preparedness. The Emergency Management Team manages and coordinates the Emergency Operations Center with support from local, state, and federal organizations during times of emergencies. Emergency management provides countywide planning, training, and exercise programs in order to be prepared for natural, technological, and our man-made emergencies. They have a responsibility for disasters. The Board of County Commissioners is responsible for declaring a local state of emergency, that's the LSE. A governor's declaration and presidential declaration are required before we're eligible for FEMA funds. And upon a declaration, all emergency management disaster operations, response, and recovery will revert to the board authority regardless of the managing agency. So you're in charge. Debris cleanup, shelters, and all responsible recovery will continue under the VOCC, coordinated by emergency management in conjunction with other county departments and agencies. During a disaster activation, the regular operational activities, training, etc., will continue under Emergency Management Director, Public Safety, or Sheriff's Direction. Emergency Management is also in charge of disaster assistance, as responsible and expected by FEMA and FDEM to manage recovery and disaster assistance, and that's the reason we must have an EM, Emergency Management. FEMA and FDEM will only deal with the individuals designated by the Board of County Commissioners to be the representatives that are trained and familiar with emergency management practices. They're in charge of response. Emergency Operations Center. The Taylor County Emergency Operations Center is the central command and coordination point for disaster preparedness, training, response, and recovery efforts for the county. The purpose of the EOC is to provide a centralized and specialized location to communicate, organize, and manage natural or man-made disasters and make strategic decisions necessary to protect the residents and the property of the county. They're also the state watch warning point. Taylor County Emergency Management coordinates response in coordination with the Florida Division of Emergency Management. All mass casualty, large-scale, environmental, or technological events, of course, require coordination with state, federal, and local responders. Emergency Management manages the mobilization of those resources. Also, we have the Emergency Warning Notification System. The Taylor County Emergency Management coordinates emergency warnings, notifications through a multimodal approach, including, but not limited, NOAA weather radios, civil emergency messages, emergency broadcast systems, emergency alert system, alert Taylor, electronic text media notifications, and also Taylor County Emergency Management issues siren alerts at Keaton and Nico Beach and two locations at Steen Hatchie, and these warnings are currently sent manually by the VHF radio.
Do you mind if I ask you a quick question? Mm-hmm. All that you're reading now, is that our rules, or is that something that came from the state, all of this?
These are your responsibilities. These are emergency management responsibilities.
That, who made them up?
I don't know if anybody made them up. I'm thinking,
I mean, who wrote them?
Okay, you have the initial responsibility under State Statute 125, but I'm sure all these were layered on over time, a lot of different acts and well, nobody just made them up. They're the responsibilities that emergency management departments.
Yeah, I'm just questioning, is this something that we put together, or was this handed to us by the state and this is the way you run it? That's my question.
I think this is over time, and Steve can back me up, over time, these are responsibilities added on to local emergency management.
You know, each county is required to have an emergency management department, and then as functions build out and with FEMA and DEM, we're given more and more and more responsibilities, like the alert Taylor weather system. A lot of this stuff, some of this stuff is voluntary, like the weather alert system that the board and emergency management signs on with. But most everything that he's talked about there is a standard requirement for any emergency management.
Okay.
County.
County.
Yes.
Yes. When they started the state emergency program and everything, they, you know, each county got a grant, and with those grants, there was responsibilities. So the majority of this did come from the state with regard to the grant, Pam.
Yeah.
When it started.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And each year they gave money, and it, as with everything, when they give money, then they tell you what to do with it.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So that has happened over the years, as things progressed and so forth. So that's where it's all coming from.
That's exactly.
Thank
right.
you.
Your EM is also in charge of planning. Emergency management is responsible for development, maintenance of plans that include evacuation, disaster housing, emergency shelter, debris management, damage assessment, and homeland security. And throughout the year, emergency management provides informational brochures and guides, establishes events, uses public service announcements, and manages the county's EM website and Facebook page. Planning development. The CEMP provides guidance on how agents respond to threats or actual disasters in Taylor County. The COO, Peter Coop, addresses continuation of critical functions and damages to infrastructure occurs in emergency. The LMS, Local Mitigation Strategy, provides goals and objectives and efforts to strengthen critical infrastructure from hazards.
Excuse me. So you've seen all these through the years. Every year we do the LMS updates and have to sign off. That's the elevation, the coastal elevation houses, and the grant for the generator at the and those kind of things. So all those are requirements. They're on a five-year cycle. Some of them we have to do every year, or what the county has to do.
Well, you know, the reason for my question, I just wasn't sure if this was tailored by us or if it was tailored by the state. That was really all I was trying to find out.
And you know, they started, you know, the county would get $30,000 a year to develop all these plans way back, long before my time. And so, mm-hmm. and now we have to maintain them and keep them up without any extra money.
I understand.
We don't get the $30,000.
Oh, no.
Mitigation. The LMS established a group of public and private members of our community that evaluated Taylor County and its potential hazards and created a guiding document, identified a strategy to mitigate the community against identified hazards. And that guiding document prioritized project lists and maintained and attempts to mitigate the community against hazards, and that's what another function of theirs. Of course, we have volunteers in this community. You don't have them possibly in every county, but you do have them here. Taylor County relies on CERT, our community volunteers, nonprofit, faith-based organizations before, during, and after times of disaster. During times of disaster, volunteers provide services to such as emotional counseling, community assistance, feeding, kitchen, shelter management support, landscaping chainsaw-type teams, debris removal for special needs, and outreach programs, including the local, state, and FEMA assistance programs. Shelters are important. Taylor County's primary shelter is Perry Elementary, and additional shelters available if necessary. In most circumstances, the primary shelter will be the first to open. In 2017, with assistance from Animal Control, a pet shelter was opened for Hurricane Irma, and the shelters are managed by the American Red Cross and the CERT members, supplementing by staffing and operating shelters. Okay. Currently, of the Florida 67 counties, there are 33 that are standalone Board of County Commissioner Emergency Management Departments. 21 that are part of a Board of County Commissioner Public Safety type department, most times largely under the direction of the Fire Chief. Now, 6 of them are under direct supervision of Fire Rescue, and there are 12 counties in the state that have emergency management operating membership. So, emergency management funding, you know about this. These are your funding sources. The Emergency Management Performance Grants provide $55,349. The Emergency Management Preparedness and Assistance Grant in the state, $105,806. And then there is a local county match that's required, which is 50% of the MPG, which is $35,523. And that's your funding sources. Operation options, since we have a vacant position, you could maintain the current organization, simply fill the position of emergency management director, and continue to have it as a Board of County Commission department. You could also do like some counties do, you could create a public safety department. I understand that you had that at one time here. That would include fire rescue, emergency management, and other some similar functions if you wanted to add those. Or there's the option for emergency management to become part of the Sheriff's Department organization. Emergency management. The mission of the Taylor County Emergency Management is to reduce or eliminate the vulnerability of people and property of the county to injury, damage, or loss of life. And I listed out, and I don't know if we want to go through all of them, emergency management responsibilities, monitoring weather conditions, providing response to the events, developing coordinated programs. One thing I did mention, maintain the registry of special need residents, provide assistance by the emergency management programs, provide mutual aid assistance of the jurisdictions, certainly have to comply with federal, state, and emergency management regulations. They do review emergency plans for nursing homes, assisted living facilities, ambulatory centers, and hospitals, collection, distribution, emergency-related information. They do conduct, and you've seen these in the newspaper, participate in emergency drills and exercise, and then, of course, they develop and maintain the county's comprehensive emergency management plan and serve as a liaison to the Florida Division of Emergency Management and some other responsibilities. And some of these redundancies, we skip over to the next slide. Benefits of all options. Y'all wanted me to list out some benefits of the different options that are possible. If you maintain the status quo, there's certainly be no change in the organizational structure, change in budget, operations, or any impact on staffing. And then operations would remain a full-time Board of County Commission department. If you created a new public safety division, like with the fire department, Fire Rescue would be the response agency. They have experience in pre-planned response and recovery on a large scale with multiple hazards and operational periods. They work with EOC certainly. And there's a possibility to reduce staffing levels. Some benefits of a sheriff department is assuming functions. Their emergency response time would be reduced because they're a 24-hour staff organization. There are multiple staff members in the sheriff's department that have years of experience in the field of emergency management at operational type levels. We were asked to list out some drawbacks of the options, some fees we came up with. You may have your own, may not. If you maintain the status quo, the response time and emergency would be the same. Disaster response could at times require intervention from the state. If you created a new public safety division, some possible drawbacks would be your fire resources would be diluted, and the fire director would be, they'd have to increase his training to get up to the emergency management standards. Some drawbacks of a sheriff's office, assuming the expenditures and operational response would not remain under your control, and then the reporting reimbursement removed from board function to a sheriff's office function. I think that's my last slide. Okay. That being said, for discussion.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Could you go back?
Jump to
that. I don't think the very last statement is exactly reporting and reimbursement would move from the board function to the sheriff's function. That's kind of misleading in a sense. If there's all reporting and reimbursement for daily operations and activities would all come go with the sheriff. In other words, the sheriff would file the reports for EM staff and their gas and everything else, and they would get the reimbursement from the state. During a disaster, then it falls back, and EM and the sheriff would still be responsible for that, but at the county, the board's direction. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear on that.
Okay. I think one important thing that I don't see listed there is when FEMA gets involved and there's a declaration, the paperwork, Steve, you know, is humongous to make sure every I's dotted, every T's crossed to get reimbursement. And I would hate for that something to happen and we wouldn't get reimbursement like we should get. So, you know, if you maintain it under the current, everybody knows what's got to be done. And Steve will vouch for that because we've done it several times, you know. But you got to maintain those records. If you don't, when they are, then they throw them out.
Ms. Cripp, you're right out here. Been doing those records and maintaining that stuff, correct?
Yes, sir.
I thought. I see that is you did it too. If she was out, you did it too. But now you can handle what's there as a paperwork.
How long have you been doing working with that?
4 years.
4 years. With FEMA reimbursement and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
She knows the ropes about what to do.
Does a good job.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
So, Madam Chair, the key to that is you need Christy or somebody with Christy's proficiency to do it, whether it's with the sheriff of public safety or remains of the same. That is a basic requirement and necessity. And, the current concern is always, you know, what if there were no Christy? You know, I mean, we would have to hire somebody quickly to do that. So, I don't know why I said it like that, but you know what I'm saying. It's just, it is a very necessary that, as it says way back, you know, FEMA requires you to have an EM, but FEMA and the state requires them to be trained and proficient and go to all the training requirements that we, you know, that are throughout the year. And regardless of who's with it, that still has to be maintained. And as an example, any person that is paid from any of those grants has to reach those proficiency levels. So if, for instance, Dan, one of his lieutenants, as an example, I don't know if this would even be, were to get some of that salary, that lieutenant would have to go to all those trainings and reach that proficiency level. Mm-hmm. Same with the sheriff, any of those. Right. So that is, you know, that is a requirement that I think they both know. The status quo as it is, you know, would be Christy. And my question to staff is if it stayed the same, would we be required to, how would our filling the vacancy process be handled? Would we advertise internally, then externally, or how would that work?
Our policy is to first advertise internally, I think for a couple of weeks, if I'm not mistaken, okay. And offer it up to internal candidates first. I mean, if we don't find a qualified internal candidate, we'll certainly have to advertise outside. But I think the key would be to get the I guess you have to have the emergency management position for it, correct?
You have to have emergency management direct.
Right.
By ordinance and statute.
Commissioner Davis, were you about to say something?
Yes. I think that you got it lined out that in probably any department that we mentioned, the fire or the sheriff or back to the originals could do it. But what if one doesn't feel the need of this position to be in this county and have it at heart? You know, then you left with something that might not get done. You know, Christian was at the second position, somebody was over her, they didn't get along. The position don't get worked at, like it worked like it's supposed to. You know, you've got a problem. But now, the emergency management person now, who does he report to?
She reports to me now. By default, if I'm without a departmental director, the staff reports to me. I don't want the job.
Yeah, I'm not saying.
But by default, Christy's reporting to me now.
And then what's our responsibility? It's our responsibility as commissioners to see that we have a in the department. Right?
Well, I think you need to be moving them or making a decision or giving me, staff, whatever guidance on what you want to do. You want to go status quo and allow me to start advertising to fill that position? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to do it with the public safety? Or do you want to look at sheriff's department? So I'm guessing, you know, we need some direction on how to proceed.
But what if you move the fire chief next year, or next week? What if he designed, you know, there's a job, sweet of berries on the juice, or sweet of juice on the berry elsewhere, and he got that job?
The fire chief's not going anywhere for a long, long time.
Well, I mean, you run that risk with any of your departments, certainly.
But, yeah.
Commissioner Page. Yeah.
May I ask Christy a question?
Yes, sir.
You certified IAM position, you have to do additional training.
No, I am.
You are
yes.
Certified.
Yes.
That's my only question.
Commissioner Moody?
I got a question. You're certified. If you were running the program and for instance the sheriff department or the fire department had somebody there with you part time, they could get that training in case you were sick or out. Something happened, and then they could cover the place if you were out. And that's how it's been doing in the past. Steve, if something happened to Steve, you would have just fell right in there and covered everything.
Yes.
Yeah. In other words, whoever gets to work with you there, under this fund and this money that's given from the government and the state, that salary, that Steve got and you got, that was split, that was out of this funding from...
Those two grants, yes.
Right, from that grant money. Mm-hmm. And it comes this year.
Yes. I think that, LaWanda, part of it pays 100% and part of it pays a smaller percent.
Correct.
Is the director's 100% out of the grant, or right. Is the assistant?
It depends on how we charge it out. We can charge to the state grant, whichever salary, and then we have the EMPG grant, which, and then we have our local match. So it's more our decision of how we decide to distribute the salary and benefits.
Before, when Dustin was here, Dustin was the assistant county administrator and the EM director. Half of his salary came from the board and half of it came from the grant. Mm-hmm. And he maintained his emergency management. And my salary as coordinator was 100% grant. So it's, and what we've had to do for, because of insurance increases and so forth, we had to pay my salary out of one grant, Christie's out of one grant, and part of both of them, workers' comp and insurance, out of the local match. There's not enough in one grant to cover one position anymore. Yes, sir.
In other words, if she was running the program out there and the sheriff's department sent a man over to help her when she needed, their salary would be covered. The sheriff wouldn't have to cover his salary. It would be covered through this grant program.
A portion of it probably, I would imagine, and I don't know that Chuck is ready to answer that, but I would assume that a big portion of that person's salary would come from this grant. So they would have to, any dollar that comes from the grant, they have to be proficient and learn emergency management.
In other words, that would help the sheriff's department to be able to handle another person's salary through this money that comes. If you don't spend this money, do you have to send it back at the end of the year?
No, sir, but we, you know, when there was only one there, that's how we bought water tankers and all those right. kind of extra stuff.
You bought extra equipment
right.
and supplies with it?
Yes, sir.
Right. So in other words, you didn't have to give it back to the state or whatever.
Right.
Right.
Would it be fair to ask Dan if there are, and Chuck, if there are, is any, what would be your plan for if you were to take emergency management as far as personnel?
Let me ask this. Did y'all come prepared to do a presentation?
We gave information to Lawanda, which was part of the presentation that you've seen here tonight.
Yeah.
I'm glad to answer any questions.
I think along your lines, if at this time, if you want to come, Dan, you can come first, and then you come, and Christy, if you want to come and just, you know, tell us why you need this, why you would, how it would benefit us for you to take those.
Is this okay?
Convince me to give it to you.
Oh, do you really want me? I'm going to say a real good car, right? Low miles. Now, as Ted said earlier, this is with the public safety with falling on the fire chief. That's the way it used to run in here in Cato County. When I started here, the fire chief was the public safety director. He was in charge of both of them. We had some issues with management back then, and it was taken away, and that's when Dustin was made the EM director. Hopefully that's not our problem anymore with the management practices because we have a new fire chief. And he's doing a great job. but there's definitely benefits in it. Like Steve was saying with the cost of it, there's only so much money. We have a little bit of a county match and everything else is grant funded. When we did it back in years past, we had extra money that we could buy the extra equipment and everything. So all of the meetings, everything we meet and we try to strengthen the county and say, where do we need generators? Where do we need this? Well, we have it all on the list, and we say, when we have the money, we're going to do this stuff. Well, the way we're doing it right now, there's really not any extra money there. So if we can return it back to a public safety, we can restructure it, save some money in the process, and put that back into operational expenses so we can start getting that equipment and making the hardening to the county infrastructure to make us a better suited to respond in disasters. Another reason why, to me, it makes sense for fire rescue, if you look earlier, everything had to do with hazard planning, hazard response, whether it be natural or man-made. Emergency management, that's what they do. They plan, they prep, and then they facilitate when that all happens. The other agency that you currently have that is a hazard response agency is the fire department. So we work closely already. I mean, Steve has worked very closely for years, and it's also with Christy. When we have a tanker truck rollover, we call them in, we have a state warning point, we tell them, okay, this is the side fuel leak, we do this, they go through there, and just go through you know, through checkpoints it has to go to. We can merge it all together. We can eliminate some of those redundancies because it's all going to be in one big agency. The biggest savings to me, like I said, is the cost of it. We can free up operational costs. We can increase the efficiency. If we could add on, say, an EM tech position to do more field work to help us maintain equipment, stuff like that. It could be a part-time position. We could do that and still free up operational costs. It's well within our wheelhouse to be able to do that. As far as the training is concerned, I already have a bunch of the ICS classes all the different stuff. I'm sure there's still a lot more, don't get me wrong. But I have no issue taking every one of those classes. That's part of my job, is I'm always taking classes. We'll just do some more. Like I said, it's well within our capabilities to return to a public safety. It operated well beforehand. The way we're doing it now operates well too, don't get me wrong. Pursuit and Steve did a great job, and they continue to do a great job. Last 2 years were the hurricanes. We've been real close working with each other. Our warm-up with our tropical storm, Alberto, once again, we worked really close, hand-in-hand. It's just, the two agencies are so close together that it just makes sense to go ahead and bring them back together the way it used to be. Questions?
I have one. If we have a major emergency, for instance, tank rollers like you talked about, that would be something you do tonight anyway. Mm-hmm. In other words, you don't have to have no, you wouldn't have to be part of emergency management. That's your job.
Yeah, and
that's with the fire department today.
What we would essentially see if it came back to the fire department is the fire chief would become your emergency management director as well. Two roles, and I would assume those functions.
In other words, if Steve was there, y'all would go do it the same way, just like you did with Steve.
Like right now, if we had that tanker truck rollover right now, our crews, it wouldn't affect our fire crews in any negative way. Only thing that you're really going to see is I would move over as the fire chief and provide more assistance and work in the management side of emergency management. And possibly, I'd say if we can free up these funds, it could possibly bring in a little bit more help. You maybe get another person at EM. Anybody who's been there during one of these big natural disasters realizes it's two people run out real quick.
Well, I was getting at, in other words, you cover the bases no matter what position this changes. Mm-hmm. You'd still be covering the bases just like you always are.
Except for, like I said, and now while we're out in the field, if our crews called it in directly, it wouldn't have to be us calling into emergency management, reporting it in so they can call it. My crews can call me and just like they already do, and I could essentially call the state warrant appointment and we can eliminate another step in that process.
Could I ask you a question? You mentioned in an earlier statement, and I didn't really understand it, that you'd like to take part of these funds and hire some kind of a tech.
Right now, we have the emergency management director and a coordinator. What I would essentially like to see is to take and create a new position, which would be a division officer, because we merged it in as a division of fire rescue, or however we word it, and hire that one internally and give it a little bit more responsibility than the current coordinator. And then possibly bring in an additional person, an EM tech, whether it be full-time or part-time, just to give a little more assistance in the field.
So that's adding a part-time or full-time position.
But it would all be you could do all of it. We've run the numbers that you can do all of that within the budget that's already been within the grant monies. Everything's within budget and still free up money for operational costs. And if we, like I said, if we didn't do the EM tech position, we left it with just, say, myself and Christy. That would free up even more money. But in any option that we go into, we can free up money for operational costs to get more equipment and strengthen our infrastructure.
No more questions.
Anybody else have questions?
Yes. The money that we saw up there, the $35,000 the county was putting in, $100,000 the state was putting in, who was putting in that other budget? We talked about less than
FEMA puts in $55,000, the state puts in $105,000, and then the county matches the $35,000.
So you're talking about $200,000.
Is that what we got for protection in this county?
Well, that's for emergency management.
And,
for emergency management.
And to be clear, emergency management is not a first responder. Emergency management is a management team. that manages the disasters and the planning and the training and all that. Christy and I never went out and responded to, you know, we might run to the tanker turned over, we might go over and take pictures and stuff, but that's not the function. We're not emergency, emergency management is not an emergency responder. So we don't take vehicles home, you know, we don't, I mean, we'll come out in the middle of the night for a storm and those kind of things, but it is a management organization for planning and preparing and then after the storm.
And if I can clarify, that would stay the same. The only person that would still be responding to calls and everything would be myself, depending on the size of the incident. Structure fires, I'm still going to do that side. But like Steve said, Christy would still be, you know, that side. I would be there in the office, work the Monday through Friday, doing that sort of thing. So and he's 100% correct that emergency management is the planning side of hazards, and you know, like I said, the organizing, not the actual in the field work, unless it's disaster, you know, going through doing disaster surveys, stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm listening to all of this, and I'm thinking, how many people does it really require to manage? I mean, what is the minimum that you need to manage?
Well, and that's where it. Let's say we, if we did bring it into back with fire rescue and public safety, and we kept just the position how it is, and I would were to assume the EM director position, we could. Like the slide said earlier, possibly lower our staffing levels because we're not going to have to hire in another emergency EM director. I would just do that anyways. We still have myself and Christy, so you'd have the same number of people as we did before, but we would free up a lot of that grant money that we can use to other things.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
First of all, I just want to say I have good rapport with these departments. Since Steve's gone, he's trained me well. I've worked 4 years. Before that, I worked 8 years with Extension. I would like to stay with the county. That's my hope. I have good insurance. Me and my husband, we rely on that. We're appreciative of that. I think that with all my training I have, that I could run this department with no problem, with a part-time assistant maybe. But I appreciate the sheriff's department, the fire department. I work well with the state, have good rapport with everyone. So if you'll take that into consideration, I appreciate my training that Steve has given me. All of you, I appreciate it. And I think that we can run it that way.
So, Christy, if it remained the same, then you'd be the main person, potentially,
right?
And maybe. Then you think you could get by with a part-time person?
I think so. During a storm, I would need, like we've had in the past, county employees to come in and help. That you know, during this last storm, it was a good exercise for us, but I think we handled it okay.
If that were to be the scenario, if that's how it happened, and you could get by with a part-time person, that would free up some funding.
Yes, ma'am.
How would you use that extra funding?
Well, we could have exercises that we've not been able to have in the past. These plans that we spoke of, I had to update those plans, the CEMP, the Emergency Management Plan. Some counties pay to have those done. If I did not have time to do those, then you can use the funds for that. But, you know, I just think that it would work out.
What are these exercises you're talking about?
Better preparing the community. Well, we have tornado exercises. We have table talks where we all meet together with the school board and different entities and discuss, like, if there was a hurricane come through, what would be the functions of all the different departments. We even work closely with the school board. The school board, we've done, I wasn't here at that time, but Steve was, have done an active shooter drill. Those funds help pay for those kinds of exercises, which are needed.
Yeah, I'm assuming that even though you, perhaps you have not had a chance to have the actual exercises, but you still have a written plan that's shared with the school and with other people, that in case you have this, this is the steps that we would take.
Yes.
Surely that's okay.
Yes.
Commissioner Page?
I tried to listen very attentively, and from all reports I get, you're quite capable of what you do out there, and I'm a firm believer that we need to try to, you know, promote from within, and you've been here a county employee for a long, long time.
Yes, sir.
Of course, now, as you understand it, it has to be advertised in-house. There might be somebody else wants the job who's more qualified than you.
Right.
But that's sort of the direction I'm leaning right now, because I haven't heard from Chuck yet.
Right. And, you know, our main job is coordination, and I'm very good at that, so.
Yeah. Oh, you're a go-getter. I've known you a long time.
I know it.
Anybody else have questions for Chris?
I got a question. For instance, you did what Faith said, you were running the thing full-time out there. And you had a, for instance, if you had a deputy that was working with you full-time, that would, this money would pay his salary. And then if they had a resource officer that called in sick, could he leave and go handle that project?
Well, that would be up to the board, but I'm sure that he could.
Yeah, so I'm just, in other words, you got somebody to fill in on that thing.
Right, especially if it's part-time.
Right.
Yes.
No, he's talking, excuse me, he's talking about if it was a sheriff.
Yeah, if you had a deputy working with you, some Wayne's group working with you, and they needed some backup as far as somebody called in and said he couldn't be a resource officer for that day, he could go out there and handle that.
That would really be up to the sheriff, but yes.
Yeah, right, right. You know, if it was a deputy. Yeah. So in other words, that money could handle the salary of one of the deputies where he could free up and work two things if he had to. And if they had an emergency, you know, we'll do what we had to do.
I like what you said about one full time and one half time. And the half time, whether it's a deputy or somebody else, I mean, that can all be worked out.
I just rather have somebody to serve two roles, do that and go help the resource officer program too.
I like that.
That's something that we're faced with. We ain't got no choice. We got to do it. And for the sake of the children in Taylor County, we need have that in our vision, you know. I mean, that's the most important.
Right. I'd like to hear from the sheriff.
Me too.
Anybody else?
Anything?
I have a question.
Okay.
Christy? Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. If the decision was made to, instead of a full-time coordinator, have a part-time, 29 hours a week, whatever, right? And that was found to be not sufficient, there would still be plenty of funding to bump that up to a full-time position?
Yes.
Okay. So it would take no additional funding than what we have now, most likely, if a part-time person was not sufficient.
Right.
Yeah, what you're saying is the budget would remain the same. It's just how you use that budget. Right. Whether you do part-time and use the rest of it for exercises, or just how you use that budget.
Right. So it's not a cost savings. It's the same amount of money used in for different things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And can you mix those grant funds? Because we're going to be state money for their resource officers.
It doesn't matter. Mixing the money?
Yeah.
You
can take from this one and this one to pay.
Yeah, you could. I mean, all the other departments, either a firefighter or a deputy or EM tech, the requirements are, it doesn't matter who's giving that salary so long as they become proficient in emergency management. So you could, like I say, my salary was EMPA, Christian's was EMPG, and we both had salary out of local match. And workers' comp. Yeah.
Okay. Ready?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chuck?
Thank you. On behalf of Sheriff Paget, I'm so pleased to be here tonight to talk about emergency management. First of all, aren't we glad, and the citizens should be proud to have so many well-trained and skilled employees from all these agencies in which for you to make a decision from?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that's
right.
Whatever decision you make will be a good one. You've heard, saw the presentation, heard the pros and the cons of each department or the sheriff taking this program. I didn't come here to talk about school resource, but this is going to fall in line with the sheriff's plan. The school board has committed over $470,000 to the sheriff to provide 7 full-time school resource officers to the schools, and we were excited to include that in our budget. You'll get that in your package for the sheriff's budget submission. He also asked for 2 additional patrol deputies to be funded by the board this year. He's in the past paid for 2 for the schools, resource officers, and the school paid for 2. But with this new mandate, of course, they've added all these new positions to us. The sheriff considered taking those 2 positions out. He thought about the school guardian program for those 2 positions that the school board needed to make it 9 total. He and the superintendent discussed it, and they both agreed that they feel like deputy sheriffs in schools are the right thing to do for our children. So the sheriff's committed to leave those 2 positions in the schools, and he'll continue to pay for those out of his budget. The 2 on his budget request are there for you to fund, and however you see fit, if you have the funds to do that. Naturally, we're prepared for emergency management. We're well staffed. We have the assets and the expertise to take that over tomorrow. Of course, with Christy there side by side with us. If you decide to give the responsibilities to the sheriff, then he would assign a deputy sheriff to emergency management to work with Christy. And that position, as I hear, is paid for from the grant funds. Is that correct?
No. Mm-hmm.
So that would free up.
It would be up to the sheriff.
Be up to the sheriff. Sure. But those that funds for that position would then stay in his budget if the grant's paying for the deputy to go to the emergency management position. So then he would take those funds relieved by the grant and hire the deputy, one of the deputies that he's asking for in his budget request. And if that happens, he'll take one of those off the table. He'll take that away from his request and reduce his budget request by the $63,000, $65,000 that he has in there. That leaves 1 additional deputy that he's asked for, and we're continuing to work with Mr. Lakey to find an alternative way to fund that from the board, whether it be general revenue or some other means to fund that. So what we're doing is telling you that for the sheriff to take emergency management would reduce his request, and that would take that away from your general revenue dollars that you would look at giving him his request.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing, and I haven't said this yet, but however we decide this, whichever of the 3 options, I am concerned about Christy. She's been a dedicated employee. She's done an excellent job. She jumped in and has taken over and has no problems with her. So, in no way would I want, if we went another route where we are now, would I want her displaced? Or, I feel like that we should protect Kristen because she's been loyal to us. Now, if it went to the sheriff, I guess he could decide that if he didn't want Kristen or whatever, he could do that, right? And we couldn't have a clause in or anything that would say you have to keep Christy. I'm just trying to protect Christy.
Well, what you're doing, if either, you've got 3 options as I see it, and you know, still you've got 125, which is your responsibility. So you're for lack of a better term, you're relinquishing some of your authority if you go the other two ways. It's just the way it is.
May I ask Chuck a question?
Sure.
Now, Commissioner Moody mentioned the fact that the second position, if Christie were fortunate enough to be elevated to the top position, then he'd like to see a deputy's position. Would that work and help you relieve one of those positions you need?
Well, I've not spoken to the sheriff specifically on that scenario, but I'm sure he'd certainly...
He'd look at it, I'm sure.
Look, his concern is the safety of the kids. He wants to be able to keep two deputies in the school,
yeah,
and also fulfill the needs of the citizens needing patrol and security out in our community. So,
right,
however we can get it done, the door is open.
Yes, sir. Okay.
And he did say, please tell them that I'd rather not have emergency management if Christie can't come along with it. So, he could really.
I think we're all concerned about that.
Yeah.
She will not be displaced if we decided to do something different.
We want her to come, and if for some reason we don't get it and she leaves the county, we're going to do our best to hire her to come to work for us.
I have a question. Has this been talked around the community? The sheriff is doing a good job with drugs. And they wouldn't want emergency management to take away from the sheriff's focus on drugs. I know the answer to that, but I'm going to let you answer it. What's your thought on that? Would emergency management deplete the sheriff's office in your fight on drugs?
It would not. We would keep it as a separate entity under the sheriff's umbrella. In other words, it would still operate apart from the day-to-day operations in emergency management, because when we have to make those recommendations from emergency management, even though it's under the sheriff's umbrella, we still come back before the board to get all those declarations passed. So although it would be there, it would be there but part.
Hybrid. This is a hybrid.
That's what they do.
Yeah, well, and that's Jefferson County.
In times of emergency, it's all hands on deck. But emergency management is still there to manage what they do at the EOC. And we pull in all resources operationally, law enforcement and corrections, and we do what we would normally do anyway.
Well, and let me expand on that. There's no way that Christie and a part-timer could run emergency management during a disaster. She has to have help from everybody else.
Right.
There are 18 support functions, from Dan and the schools to the bus drivers, public works, animal control, military affairs, the Red Cross. There are 18 functions that she trains with every summer. She probably already had it, to go over all those parameters. So regardless of where it stays or goes, that man and the sheriff's department as well will make it work. That's their job. They know they're part of that emergency support function. So I'm confident that, you know, if it stayed with her during the disaster or it goes either two places, they could, you know, they would continue to contribute and work as a team together. But you got to have everybody working as a team, and the way one would help more than another, you know, would be not in a disaster. It could be in a missing person situation, or you know, somebody missing on the water, or Dan has a boat, sheriff has a boat, or a missing child, and those kind of things that emergency management doesn't play a part in a lot, but they very well could if it was part of the sheriff's department's program. So what I'm saying is that, you know, this it's a difficult decision, and there are pros and cons with both of them, and I would also want, you know, Christy to stay there again. She, so there are.
One other comment I'll make, sure, toss this around. That CERT program is a wonderful thing. It's a great program. They donate many hours to the community. Sheriff's always wanted to create a citizens on patrol, eyes and ears out in the community, riding and looking. He mentioned that he would take that CERT team and roll them into that program, train them to be eyes, put them in cars with yellow lights, and have them patrol when they could, volunteers, out in the community, driving their neighborhoods, observing, and many other sheriffs do that program as well. But that's already in place. The CERT team's already there. We just need to equip it and give them a little more training. So that's just another point.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was right.
Any more questions for him, anybody?
So does the sheriff, understand, and I know, I would hope so, the sheriff understand that during a local state of emergency, he's still responsible for the operations and at the direction of the board, through Christy and the deputy out there, whomever, to work with FEMA and do the paperwork and coordinate the sandbags and everything else that the county needs done. She's still an employee of the sheriff, and so it would still be that, you know, the sheriff, he understands that.
We understand, and I've expressed to him all these needs that would have to be maintained. You know, I don't want to go into my background, but with my experience with the state, two different agencies, we work hand in hand with Fire Marshal's Office and Division of Forestry, and we did damage assessment, we did DOC operations in Tallahassee. I was assigned to stable operations, so I'm not sure who he's going to sign out there, but with myself and others, we're adequately prepared, staffed to handle those needs and understand what we have to do for reimbursements. I filled out enough FEMA forms. I could do them in my sleep. We had to track every mile, every gallon of gas, every man hour, every expenditure, and that same process would take place on the county level.
And I would be confident with any of them that they're going to make it work, because it's the sheriff's reputation on the line, and it's the fire services, you know, they're going to, and of course Christy, it's her career, she's going to make it work. So
whomever you choose, it's going to be successful. Look what a great group of people and employees you have to choose from. So we're all going to make it work no matter which way it goes. Thank you.
I want to ask a question, and I hate to ask the question, but I want to piggyback off of what you said. And I do believe that of the three, that it would work with all three. But just in case, this is just a just in case scenario, which I don't think would happen, but I want to ask the question. If it was given to someone else, and for some reason it didn't work out the way we wanted it, could we take it back, or do they have to give it back to us?
Now, there's one of the agreements that was handed to me that I read rather swiftly, the one from Jefferson County, is that either party may opt out of it with 60-day notice. You can put that kind of clauses in agreements. And it's what's called an interlocal agreement. You know, you can put those kind of clauses opting out on it.
Okay, that answers my question. And I do have another question. I don't know who can answer this question, but I've heard about how it used to be with the fire chief as the public safety officer. My question is, why was it changed? Was it not working and had to be changed? Or what was the rationale for changing it? Who knows?
From what I recall, when the public safety director retired, the new chief wanted to work a particular schedule. And
it was when Chief Manning was here back in around 2009-ish in that period,
yeah, mm-hmm.
There was some issues in management where the administration kind of thought maybe he was dealing with too much.
Will you come up here? I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. If I recall, it was that they felt maybe he was had, because at the time he was in charge of animal control, emergency management, and the fire department. So the first thing that they did was they said, okay, we're going to take animal control away. And after that came emergency management, and then he became just a standalone fire chief again. And then the then EM coordinator became the EM director. So like I said, that was history. We had one person that was had management issues or wasn't.
So it wasn't
up, he wasn't up to the challenge, we'll say. And then, but like I said, before him, it ran for years with as a public safety and didn't have any issues or any problems.
Well, it wasn't that many years. I mean, we've gone back and forth through the years.
Yeah. But
with
went
different.
More.
So instead of changing the person that was not whatever, up to par or whatever you want to say, they changed the program, basically.
Yeah, they dismantled the public safety and put it into separate departments.
And made three directors instead of one.
Yeah. And the idea with, if you went back to public safety, is uniting those back and simplifying it. Instead of having three directors, saving some money, you know, in one department or the other, and having one director that's managing multiple departments.
Well, I have to say that I would have concerns that we would not want to overload one department. I think we've just gone through that where we may have a department now that's overloaded on the director. And I sure would not want to get in that position again where we have thrown more responsibilities on someone and you know, you're overloaded.
Well, I would bing that on the person that would be overloaded. I'm confident to say that, it wouldn't be an issue, especially because we still have Christy out there. It wouldn't be just me. It would be, you know, dividing up my duty between both the fire department side and the EM side. But like I said, I'm confident that if the board did choose to go that direction, it would not be an issue for me to run both those stations. Like I said, there's a lot of work we do in the fire department that is kind of what EM's already doing with the hurricanes and everything. We're already doing a lot of the same work, so it's not like it's that much out of work. There is still reports and stuff that has to be done, but it's manageable. If I didn't think it was, I wouldn't be here asking for it.
Yeah. So your office is where now? At the air base?
At the fire station, out of there.
And then you would be at the emergency management?
Yeah, I could relocate my office out there. As the fire chief, primarily I'm an administrative position, so I just need an office and a desk. And I can, and with the fire service now having seven fire stations throughout the entire county, I don't have an office at each station, like I said, so I'm more the administrative role of the fire service.
Why in the world do you want to add more on your plate? You're a busy man as it is, managing the fire department. And you want these additional responsibilities.
I feel we can improve the service to the county. Point blank. I think there's improvements that we can do. I think if you run this function, bring up the money. I think there's improvements that we can provide. Not that we're not doing a good job. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I do think that if we put this together by consolidating the two, I think there's room for improvement. And that is my one function, is to provide highest level safety of the Taylor County. That is what I do.
Well, I applaud you for, you know, thinking in those terms and willing to stick your neck out there, so to speak.
I would do it right.
I couldn't make a bad decision. You know, if we don't make a decision today.
Currently, in the building out there, who is in the building and what do they do? The building.
In emergency management?
Yeah, maybe Steve, you want to answer that?
Dispatch
is out there. Sheriff Dispatch is in there 4 years.
Sheriff Dispatch and then Christy.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so if, for instance, it went to the Sheriff's Department, what changes would y'all make in terms of the use of the building? Have you thought about that?
I would probably give Christy the big office. She'd have more room to work. And other than that, we just need our or whomever the sheriff appoints to be out there to have a workspace.
Maybe your head dispatcher.
It'd be a minimal move. We're in and out of there all day anyway.
Yeah, since dispatch has moved there, from my law enforcement background, it's been refreshing, frankly. You know, they have a lot of, the fire service has training out there, and the sheriff's department and police department have training out there. And so we get full use of it out there. And if they have a manhunt, you know, which is what I like, if they have a manhunt, they have their briefings out there and their dog tracking teams and that kind of stuff. So all that would continue. But there wouldn't be that much changing as far as...
Before we move on, are there any other questions or comments or anything else we need to talk about concerning this? Because this is a big deal.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
No responsibility to come home, ma'am.
Say that again.
More responsibility that comes with more money.
Yeah. Okay. You keep that in the back of your mind.
Yes, sir. I don't have a problem with paying people what to do to them.
Well, I want to thank you all for being here tonight and sharing your visions and what you can contribute to this. I appreciate it, all of you. And I do think that of the three of y'all, I think all of y'all are equally capable. I wish it were not like that because it would be an easier decision. But I'm sure whichever way it goes that we will be in good hands. And again, thank y'all.
I would like to ask a possible time frame for a decision. Is this something you'd like to discuss as we go on with our budget hearings, or would you like to see this a future agenda item? Are there any thoughts as to when a decision might be made?
Yes.
I'd love to see the ball roll. I'd rather, as soon as we could, make the decision and get everybody in place and whatever we're going to do, whatever decision we make, we need to do it as quick as possible. We need to get things behind us. We keep putting things off and talking to death, that kills me. I like to make things happen and get all flowing. I know we can't make a decision tonight, but we need to as soon as possible. And that's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a question for the attorney. Is there any tweaking or adjustments that you can think of that need to be done with our ordinance? It's kind of a generic ordinance as far as creating the emergency management department.
I like it being generic.
Well, I didn't know that wasn't a negative.
Right. You asked the question, I answered it, you know. And the thing is, I would just say this, it's not a legal thing, but you know, there may be a storm tomorrow, and like Mr. Jim was saying, decision next meeting.
One more question that I had. I know not long ago there was some conversation about the sheriff's work crew. Does that figure into this equation?
It figures into, and I'm just going to say, one of the deputies that need funding.
Explain that to us, exactly what the proposal might be. Yeah. What would we get out of that?
Okay, I understand they have two crews that go out now through out of the jail, run by correctional officers.
Yes, sir.
If we were to fund one of those positions, and we talked to Sheriff about it, we talked about this, then it would be like our crew. It would be like the state crew that we have now.
Right.
We would direct 100% the work that crew would do, and the sheriff would be agreeable to that. And we would fund that same as we fund a state crew. And that would be one of the... Wait.
That would be the second position we were talking about in our budget request. So if the sheriff was assigned emergency management and work crew was paid for through whatever funding, that would take both of those requests off the sheriff's budget request for next year. Both of those positions.
Any comments?
I'm confused about something you said earlier. I'm sorry, but back to the SROs.
Yes, sir.
$470,000.
Yeah, it's 475, whatever the number
okay.
is.
Okay. Seven FTEs.
Yes, sir.
And the school wants nine, right?
Yes, sir.
And so where are those other two coming from? From existing sheriff budget? Or
his current budget.
We already
fund those, yes.
Okay, all right.
We fund those, and then I think there's a revenue source back to the county for the other two. The school board is a reimbursement.
Okay, all right.
So we pay half.
That clarifies it. Okay.
I got
one thing. You fund that for what you pay for the state officers with the Department of Corrections, which is like $57,000. Those that you do with the state, you don't have to worry about liability insurance, you don't have to worry about walking workman's comp, any of that stuff, whereas the sheriff would have to do that.
We'll assume all that.
And were we talking about taking away one of the pay crews from the state?
No.
Keeping
no,
that, and this would be an addition.
Okay. You know how much grass cutting we need,
parks,
and
yeah.
That's
from today.
Who, if I could ask one more question,
sure.
Who would be in charge of saying the salary levels? Who would, the sheriff, would he handle 50's salary as far as if he got a raise or more money or that kind of thing?
Sheriff would set that salary?
Who set y'all salary before, Steve? I mean, how was that set?
The county administrator and the board.
Okay. Well, my question was, I didn't know how that was handled. Okay. And if it went to the sheriff's department, it would be up to the sheriff to make that decision about the salaries of the employees.
Yeah, you're,
I would assume so.
Yeah, I would assume you're relinquishing everything personnel-wise to the sheriff to hire, fire, pay, raise increases, promote, anything.
I just want to make sure.
There's a reason for that. Too.
She don't get a pay cut. If anything, gets a pay raise.
She don't make enough money now, Mr. Jim.
That's what I'm getting to.
Yes, sir.
You're on the record.
That's what I'm getting to. That's what I want to make sure. Yes, sir. You know.
Yes, sir. We're all about that. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Now, these two work crews. Mm-hmm. Now, I can see from May through September or so, where they'd be really, really busy. But what about November, December, January, February? You've got three crews now. So what would happen? What would you do with these people then? Because there's no mowing to be done.
Yeah, we have construction projects that we need to take on. I mean, we've got to
leave. Always trashing pickup.
Even including the screws in the roof of Forest Capitol Hall, we haven't got to. So there are projects out there we need to have done.
And these people would be capable of doing that?
To a certain degree. I mean, you can't ever say they're 100% capable.
From time to time, we have some very talented people in our jail, yes, ma'am.
They must be.
Well, yes, sir.
From time to time, you don't wait.
So,
most of the shop, but that's telling.
But I'm sure that would kill those better inmates.
Well, depending on your task, we can pick from our trustees who are classified to be outside working, whatever skill set you need, we go in and cherry pick them for you. Yeah.
The road departments always need more help with projects that they do, whether it be putting coal tar on potholes or whatever. You know, they could do anything.
Cleaning out ditches, cleaning out from under
cleaning the bathrooms, that
picking out trash. Because on that cycle, our paid mowing crew is not mowing, like during the winter.
Right.
Our paid crew doesn't mow, so that's when we have the issue with the trash. And what happened this last year is that our state crew, who is supposed to work on special projects, had to be pulled off to pick up trash. Or, I mean,
there's plenty to do, and I don't know if that would be just restricted just to highway projects, but the lady in the courthouse is out sick, she's the custodian, you know, there's floors be mopped up there, the trash be taken out, the grass be moved around the courthouse, there's plenty of work to be done. I can promise you that's be busy, y'all, if you want, we'll get you.
So am I hearing then, do we want to put this on the agenda for, when is our meeting, next Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Do we want to move it on for Tuesday?
Before you go, let me say something. Now, that's what I was hit with today, and I was floored. They said, see, our spending is out of control. When they saw that $95,000 on that kind of building, I got about four calls. They say, you just went up the Shady Grove and spent $300,000. Went out there to supervise the election office and spent another three. Now you got another $100,000 coming out. Thomas, you're all out of control. I said, well, you know, I said, well, you see where I voted, I voted. If we spend, take this $100,000 out of contingency. I said, yes, sir. We don't doubt the county needs that building. But do we need to spend $700,000 out of, that wasn't budgeted for or wasn't expected to have done? I don't know. Said, but I'll tell the commission your concern.
Okay.
So, you know, we got others looking too, and they don't, it's going to hit somewhere.
Okay.
Maybe y'all haven't heard
that. Oh, yeah.
I haven't heard it, and I made the motion to spend that $195,000.
I think the project.
You second it.
Yeah,
I haven't heard. Nobody's called me about it.
Well, I think all three of those were neat projects. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was, you might remember one of the first tasks that you had, you know, was let's get these projects done. Your supervisor election building had set for a while.
Yeah, it is there.
And there's the cost of a building just sitting in.
That's true.
And then the road department was due to that. And the community said it's going to get used. We've already got people lined up to.
Well, and then they mentioned the hospital. That's with the hospital you know, I said no, that decision hadn't been made.
No. And y'all deferred that to get the study back when it's best.
Yes, but then they told me that. Said they bet there's 70 buildings, 100 buildings in town that has asbestos in it and people are living in it. And they're better than 65 years old. So you go in and take asbestos out of those two? I don't know. So I was able to put a long but anyway, yeah, I wish the newspaper down so they could write it down. I told them I would bring it up as a concern, and they're not here, so.
Well, here's how I feel about it. You know, we have our revenue, and we take most of our revenue, and we do things that we have to do, okay? We have salaries, and we have programs, and we have services, and we have roads to repair and fix and bridges and culverts and on and on. There's a certain percentage of our budget that we have to spend just to keep the county going and alive. So I think that it's from time to time, if you're going to take some of your money that you've set aside and you're going to do something that the public can enjoy, they should be able to enjoy some things that their tax money goes for versus just for operations. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if you build a community center or whatever it is, they get to enjoy some of their money they've spent, they've given for taxes. And then you've got this building that we just approved last week. Well, this is one of our county buildings that has mold in it, and you can't keep the people out there, you know, where you've got all that mold. So there's some things you have to do, some things you want to do, and the citizens should be able to enjoy some of their money that they spend.
And we did, I mean, even though it says cost overrun, we did that building about as frugal as we could. It is a basic metal office building, you know, no frills. I mean,
that's just like at home with our budget. You know, you pay your bills and all this, but it's nice to take a little bit of it and go out and eat or buy something that you're, go somewhere. You know, so it's kind of the same thing with county money. And, you know, saying.
If you don't spend a little bit on infrastructure, the whole place is going to cave in on us.
That's right.
If you don't mind me directing us back to the time frame for the decision.
Next Tuesday's fine with me.
It's Tuesday?
It'll be
well,
I mean, it's...
And it'll be an add-on to the agenda.
You know, we could add it, we could wait 6 months, but I think the decision is still going to be a difficult decision, so let's put it on Tuesday's agenda. That's like Commissioner Moody says, let's quit kicking the ball down the road, let's go ahead and do it. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's go on.
Thank you.
Item number four, the board to discuss human resources policies.
Thank you for your patience.
So, as you know, we have an annual employment law audit that's done by the Prisoner Group each year. And as a result of that, they made several recommendations for policy changes or amendments or updates. Some of them are new, some are amendments. And over the next few months, I'll be bringing these to you to review. So tonight, I brought five of them. The first one that I would like to talk to you about is the violation of local, state, and or federal laws and self-reporting of arrest and convictions policy. This policy basically states that our employees are responsible for assisting the county in protecting the public's health and safety, and that's really important because not only is that based on the services that we provide, but also in the times of emergency. And so with this policy, if anyone is known to be violating a local, state, or federal law on county property or at a county-supported function, they will be subject to referral for prosecution to the appropriate law enforcement agency, in which we kind of do that anyway. Like if we have a vandalism or theft, we will turn that over to the police department or the sheriff's department, depending on where it was located. But this policy kind of brings that into our policy to protect us in case of litigation. But also self-reporting for arrests and convictions, and we do not currently have this. We do a background check for pre-employment screening, but right now we do not have a policy that requires them to report if they were arrested after they were hired, which is really important. And I'll give you an example. This is just a really fake, made-up example. Let's just say that we hired someone at the library, and that person had been here for 9 wonderful years, and they went on vacation down in South Florida somewhere, and in the process, something happened, and they were arrested for child abuse. Came back home, went back to work. Nobody here knows what happened. It's not public community knowledge, so nobody's going to report it. But this policy would require that person to self-report. So this is really important. I would urge you to really consider this seriously. There is another policy, even I'm going to skip through because it's going to relate to this policy, and it is the educational driving, criminal, and employment background screening during employment policy, which we do not currently have. We have employees that are not only driving county vehicles, but let's just say that person committed that crime down south and they did not self-report. This policy allows us to periodically check our employees to make sure stuff like that has not happened and that they are still eligible for continued employment. It allows us to check their driver's license to make sure they're not suspended and that they're still valid while driving a county vehicle. These two policies really important. Let's see.
So in other words, if it's not self-reported, then you still have a way with the second one to check and see.
Yes.
So they get by until that time comes if they don't report it, that you check yourself.
Correct, but right now we have nothing in place.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't require them to self-report, and we cannot background check after they are employed without a policy. So these two policies are really important for us as an agency. So,
I've got a question.
Sure.
If the scenario that you described were to happen, and right now,
mm-hmm.
and you have nothing to back you up, and what would happen now if you found out they did that? Nothing?
Do we have any, do we,
terminate the people now, or what do we do?
What would we do now? We have not encountered that since I've been here, but we would most definitely take that very seriously. We would contact the liability attorney, which is what we generally do first step always. We communicate, then we contact the liability attorney and say, legally, what are the best steps that we can take in this scenario?
At the present time, we don't have a policy that allows you to check driver's license of all county employees to drive vehicles.
Not after hire, we do not.
So we may have drivers driving trucks.
Well, our workers
the CDL has expired, or
The problem is that our workers' compensation insurance requires us to do that. So even though we do it, we do not have a policy in place to protect us for doing that.
We need a policy on that, for sure.
And then you had a previous employee several years ago that I just happened to see the ticket. The person was driving a county vehicle. He had a DUI, and his license had been suspended. And he was driving the vehicle the day I called to let him know.
And we actually, when we did review last year for the cruiser group, we actually had two employees. So because we did not have a policy in place, there's really not anything you can do other than remove their driving privileges at that time until they were reinstated. Mm-hmm. So that these policies will allow us to take action if they're arrested or convicted and maybe no longer appropriate to work in that position, or if they've been knowingly driving a county vehicle for 6 months with a suspended license, you know. So these are really important.
So I gather that more of these come in later.
Yes, sir. I tried to bring the ones I thought were that had the highest impact first. The Equal Employment Opportunity Plan, I just really want you to remove the sunset date from that. It has a sunset date on it for May of this year, and it's actually reviewed every year by the prisoner group, and they did not have any feedback for that, but if we can remove the sunset date, it can just continue on until they have a recommendation for change or until you decide you want to make a change to it. And
what about Edmunds attorney?
Sir?
It's a good idea.
Good idea.
It, because it's something that they're reviewing annually, you know, it's not left up for us to review and to catch any law changes for that. They're actually doing it for us.
Mm-hmm. And since we have a sunset date, it just leaves us vulnerable because this policy could expire, and we really don't want that to happen because we have to have this plan in place for some of our grants. And we really want to keep it current.
Yeah, I agree.
I have a question. Why do we have a sunset date?
I don't know.
I can answer that.
Well, answer
that. I can answer that. I was here. So when we originally put all of our policies in this format, Jack Brown's logic for this was it would force us to review our policies every couple of years or how often. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it sounds like Jack Brown to me.
And maybe they didn't have the Christner group to review them annually at that time, you know, so it's a little bit different.
It's called checking your tickler.
Yes, sir.
You know?
But then we had some that sunset it without us.
That's true. It's happened before. Yeah.
So we need sunset.
No, not on this. There's some things that you want to sunset, but not on this Equal Employment Opportunity Plan, because you want to be able to say to your constituents and your people who live in the county that you are an equal opportunity employer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's to me that's really important that you're able to say that.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Okay, workplace injuries. We do currently have a safety policy, but it doesn't really address the non-retaliation for reporting a workplace injury. Sometimes you will find that some of our employees may not necessarily want to come forward and say, I hurt myself for fear of retaliation, for fear not being eligible for a promotion or fear of maybe losing their job, just because years ago there were not laws in place that protected them. So the workplace injury policy really complements our safety policy to say that we encourage them to come forward, and that really is to help us in a lot from a liability standpoint in a litigation. So like when we push these new policies out to our in our personnel manual, I'm actually going to create a signature page that says 2018 personnel manual updates, and each employee will receive a copy of all the new updates, and they will sign off that they understand and receive those policies. So I think to encourage them and for them to see in writing that we encourage them to come forward and report any injury, it also requires it to be mandatory reporting. So it kind of covers us from two standpoints.
Two questions, and I'll ask the questions that we can answer them.
Sure.
If we have an accident, so somebody gets cut with an axe or something, are they automatically drug tested? That's my first question. And then the second question is, do we review our safety policies with all employees annually and have them sign off that they've gone back over the safety policies?
No. Okay. Okay, so to answer your first question, we do post-accident testing unless it's an act of natural disaster. So if someone was driving a truck and it's a hurricane and a tree falls on the truck, of course we're not going to drug test because they really didn't have anything to do with that accident. But we do post-accident test for all accidents. For the second one, for the safety policy, we're doing it new employee orientation. For all new employee orientations, whether or not in the past it's been done annually, June 19th makes my first anniversary date. So I can tell you what we are doing though. We are bringing back the safety committee, and we've already sent out flyers to all the employees to encourage participation. And that could be part of the safety committee's duties to look at that safety policy and make recommendations, Marsha, because they work out in the like the road department and environmental services, and they can take a look at our safety policy and say, is this realistic for my workplace? So that could be one of the things on the agenda for our safety committee. And then once it's we have some recommendations together, maybe we could bring it, if there are any at all, we could bring it back for review for you guys to look at and make a decision on, and then we can roll this out annually if that is your preference.
Now, where I have worked before, I had annual updates on safety, and a lot of times it was just going back over the same thing, mm-hmm. but you can become complacent.
Sure.
You know, until you're reminded again. And also, along with the safety programs and annually updates, was a sensitivity training. Did we do any kind of sensitivity training? Or
sensitivity on
just harassment and things like that?
We do an annual sexual harassment or harassment for supervisors. When I went to the last HR roundtable, they said that every employee should have a once-in-a-lifetime harassment or sexual harassment training. So if they're not a supervisor, that should happen once in a lifetime. So I came back and I checked through, and I just really couldn't find any solid documentation that said every employee for the counties had that. So that's actually what I've been doing over the past few weeks. I've been down to the library, I've been to environmental services in the road department, I've actually been out to a couple of roll-off sites. So whatever I need to do to make sure that happens for our employees, we're going to make sure that we capture every single employee for that.
Good.
Marshall, can I add something about the workplace injury?
Sure.
From a slightly different viewpoint, another good reason for this is we want employees to report their injuries, so their any costs are funneled through our workers' comp insurance. Employees, I think, have a habit of if they hurt themselves, they want to use their health insurance because it's easier, and they can pick their doctor, and they don't have to. It's just easier to do that. But we need to keep those losses separate. just for rating purposes. Yeah. And if something that they think is a minor injury escalates into something major, mm-hmm. then they need the proper coverage for that and not have to pay a deductible and 20%. It needs to be covered by our workers' comp insurance. Mm-hmm.
Do we have any more questions? You put your training programs on when you change these policies. They're going to have to go through it. Everybody's going to sit down and go through that program and then sign off at the end of the program, and you'll be signed that they will, you know, witness that they were there and they heard everything that went on.
Yes, sir. You're talking about the sexual
right.
harassment and harassment?
Right.
Yes, sir. We have an acknowledgement form that came from
the And all the policies that you, safety policy and everything else, you should do the same thing. All
yes,
the companies
sir.
I work for, they put them through a seminar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mm-hmm. and that's just... And then they, at the end of the seminar, they said, well, I've been here 8 hours and I signed off on it, or
sure.
2 hours or whatever.
I know that when the personnel policy manual changed in 2014, so were the updated safety policies. So every file has the 2014 signature page for the safety policies and the updated policies. What happened between 15 and 16, I just really don't know. So we're working on making sure that we're bringing these back to their memories and refreshing them so that we won't have someone that says, you know, I've been here for 20 years and I don't remember what they said to me when I hired in. So we are working on that.
Now, I'm all for annual updates and reviews.
Now, you said this just for managers and not?
No. We do an annual, actually the Krusner Group comes in for us and does an annual sexual harassment training for supervisors. And we bring in department directors, we're there, office managers, superintendents, working team leaders, all of those are there. But for the regular employees who are not in any type of supervisory role, the law says they only have to have it once in a lifetime of their employment. And that's what I'm doing now, is making sure that they did have it and that they know what to do if that happens to them.
And you get their signature, they all sign off on
yes.
it, date it.
Mm-hmm. And a witness.
She's good. She's good.
Yes.
Ma'am, of course you understand this is a workshop, so you need to bring these up in front of the board for them to
yes.
amend the policies. And I specifically request that if they're passed, that you get me a new booklet with the amendments on it, so
I'm
I can
sure.
keep that on my desk when I get a question.
I'll print you out a whole new manual.
That's what I want. Yes,
all
ma'am.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay. For the medical marijuana policy, the reason they recommended this policy is because, of course, we have the drug testing, but with the law changes for medical marijuana, we want our employees to know that if you do not have a prescription for this, that's right, you're not going to have a job. I'm sorry. If you do not have a prescription or a medical reason for that test to test positive for marijuana, it's going to be a regular positive drug test. So we have to have this in our policy in order to take action on that.
Medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And Florida does have a couple of medical programs where they're writing prescriptions for that, and that's the reason that they're recommending that we push these policies out into our manuals.
They're using that as pain management instead of giving them all them pills.
Mm-hmm.
Is what they're doing.
Yes, sir.
I'm thinking about trying some of them. Yeah.
See what that might be. Not ready for some.
Not ready for some.
Well, how often are the employees drug tested? Only if there's an incident when they're hired, or do randoms?
Well, with the law changes in 2017, it really limits what we're allowed to do. It has to be, for pre-employment, it has to be a safety-sensitive position. If we're going to do a random testing, it has to be a safety-sensitive position.
A what?
Safety-sensitive.
Yeah. So that means like your CDL drivers, library staff who are in direct contact with children, your 4-H workers, firefighters,
mm-hmm.
Someone who's in charge of very, very secure information, like your human resources director, would be considered safety sensitive. But as far as everyone else, it has to be post-accident. Unless they exhibit behavior that would suggest that that needs to happen, but it needs to be very well documented.
Right, right. Okay, you got any more?
I have a quick question, just for my own education, if not that I need medical marijuana.
That's what you said.
If a person is prescribed for medical marijuana for, you know, pain management or whatever,
sure.
Are there restrictions that we can do as an employer as far as not letting them drive heavy equipment or whatever?
Anytime, I would say, okay, so when we have employees that are on specific medications that limit driving, they bring in documentation. So if an employee tests positive for medical marijuana, and they bring in their prescription, we can request documentation from that provider or that physician, medical provider, whatever, to say that they are safe to drive that vehicle.
They are safe?
Are or are not safe.
Are
they clear to drive?
They have to be cleared.
Mm-hmm. We can do that.
Okay.
That makes sense. You know, a lot of sense if we get that done.
And our CDL drivers have to have a physical exam anyway, our firefighters, you know, so it'll become the issue anyway if they do have a prescription for that.
That's just like a bottle of liquor. You know, if you had a prescription, you could drink liquor. If you drank the whole bottle, you don't need to be driving it, no matter what. So they can take just as much of that marijuana as they want to, you know.
Yeah.
And be out in their field.
Do you have one more?
No. I'd say that we put this on the agenda for next Tuesday.
Okay.
And go ahead and take care of it.
Okay.
Am I at this or the first meeting in July?
Just don't get
it. As soon as we can.
Okay. I mean, but you don't want to.
We could add it.
If we're going to add one thing, let's add it. Okay. Get it over with.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and do it. It's easy to add it. Something like this, because it sounds like it needs to be in place.
It does.
Yeah,
and so that's on the
19th?
Tuesday morning.
Tuesday. Daytime meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Tuesday.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll all be sure to be clear-eyed and lucid.
Try my best.
Number five, the board to discuss trash pickup by contractors. Whose is this?
I guess so. I mentioned it during the last board meeting, I know the board had talked about it in the past. There had been a plan when I was an employee or a discussion of a plan to allow for local small businesses and contractors to pay a fee to use, you know, to use our roll-off sites. And I don't know how those discussions progressed and whether they were just never finalized or what.
They were not. And what happened, I had brought to the board several times about someone that had contacted me that wanted to start a little business.
Okay.
And my goal was to make it so that it was not as hard for a person to start that business. Previously, people had wanted to do it, but they couldn't because it was too hard to get the permits and everything. So I wanted to make that easier. So we discussed how that could be done, and we decided that if somebody wanted to do that, they fill out the application, and if they felt like that something on the application was too burdensome, then they could bring it back to us and we could rule on that as it came up. In terms of making any decision on what they would do with that trash once they got it, we did not. You know, it could be argued that they pick up in the county. Obviously, they wouldn't pick up in the city because we have garbage pickup, but that person's already paying their $140 a year, so why should they have to pay again? And then someone said, well, if someone like that did start that business, that perhaps they would have certain days that they would take it so we could be prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing really concrete was ever decided.
And we're at a point now where, I mean, nobody's approached me about it. I just, you know, going back through memory and things that I'd heard in board meetings and wanted to get clarification on that, and I don't know that we need to move forward. I'm not asking that we move forward.
Yeah, I guess until we could decide, or we could wait until it happens. I've sent word to this individual several times. You know, what do you still, are you still interested? And I haven't heard anything. And it might be that once they got into, you know, the cost of that operation and all, I just don't know.
What about someone that lived in the county who went around doing landscaping and yard work and clearing trees, you know, not major landscaping, but, you know, cutting back azaleas and those kind of things. And technically he's, and if he lives in the city, he doesn't have a pass to do it, even though it's for that citizen in the county. The only alternative now, I guess, is that the person that contracted him goes with him to him.
Loans in their card.
Loans in their card, which there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, but it happens.
I would just like to explore and talk more about the possibility of having small business owners be able to purchase permission to go to the roll-off sites. And I don't know that that's, I don't know what the fee would be. I don't know what you know, the parameters would be.
Well, you get into how would you charge? I mean, if we bought scales, we could charge, obviously, weigh it. Or is it by volumetric, you know, measure the trailers? Even the waste management, waste pro guy said, you just measure the trailer, a 9-foot trailer so much, a 12-foot, et cetera. So there's three or four different ways you could do that, but
that's,
we want to do that.
That is. I wouldn't rather the roll-off attendant not be in the job of collecting money or gauging any of that. Mm-hmm. But we have a pre-permit now. If we had somebody that, you know, a $250 permit or whatever that.
Well, and we've had the same request from city residents that just want to take some, you know, they just want to take a load of tree limbs or whatever, and I get the same question on a regular basis. Can I just pay the $140 and use the roll-off site to, you know, to take a pickup truck load of trash? Or can I pay $20 or can I pay whatever? And we don't have any mechanism in place for that now. It would be the same type scenario.
Same type thing, and I don't want to open can worms. I just want.
Hey, it's good to discuss.
Yes, sir.
You take it as a contract. You got a license. You're not only going to bring limbs. You're going to bring blocks.
But if he takes it to Greenville, he's going to charge our citizens for that offset. Where,
yeah, right.
You know, conceivably.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, I'm not against it, but this is, could happen.
That
$140 you're talking about, he says, give me a $140 pass and I just want to carry a load of limbs there.
Yeah.
Well, he needs that one and he goes to that one over there. Next
That's
time,
That's
you know.
True.
My concern is, you know, we need to really discuss this, because if we were to do that and somebody could buy that, can we accommodate all that extra? You know, do we have the bins? Do we have the personnel?
Right.
Do we have the trucks? Do we have, can we physically accommodate that?
We discussed it in a lot of our conversation. The original intent of $140 was just kind of like household trash.
Household garbage.
Just household garbage. That's the service we had to provide. And then we kind of started layering in the other things with it. So if you really just look at it, it's really just household garbage service. Waste Pro has got a franchise to do roll-off sites and their commercial.
Bring
so
roll-off trailers out to the site where they pick it up.
Different construction. Yeah.
Do we want to?
Yeah.
In other areas, for instance, Gainesville or Tallahassee, if you want to take down a big pine tree in your yard or oak tree or something, you got to go get a permit from the county or the city. And then you have to hire a dumpster. You have to hire a dumpster to be placed out there, and then you put all that waste in it and you pay for that. And we've let that go on and on over the years, you know, and there's been a many trailer load of tree tops and limbs and dead pine trees and oak trees all of our dump sites, and the $140 won't cover all that.
No. I mean,
subsidizing that.
I mean, we just let it go. we really need, when you talk about trash, we really need to work with the city and get them to build them a nice roll-off site to handle their stuff, and that would take a real load off of us. I mean, that's what we had to do part for to start with. The city, they need them. I mean, city people come to me all the time and call me and say, what can I do with this? What can I do with that? I said, what you need to do is talk to the city about coming like right over here where they keep their trash truck, fill them a nice roll-off site. And then that would solve all that and solve a lot of our issues. And I don't understand them. I just can't grasp why they haven't already done that.
I think they're supposed to set up some kind of zone system, aren't they, for getting water?
Yes.
That mattresses off
the side. About the waters.
We just bought or something.
Just killed me that they haven't, you know.
Well, I move, even though we can't vote, that we can, you know, just continue talking about it, because I'm not for creating a bunch of new fees and then it turns into taxes increase and all that kind of stuff. So,
we're not going to do that.
Okay.
I've heard more from contractors who are in the business of taking down trees, and they don't have anywhere to carry their stuff to.
Well, they can carry it to our roll-off site out there.
Out here?
Yeah, and our incinerator. Gary and them will.
They have no way to charge them.
They don't have no way to charge.
No. So the other option is they've got to either carry it off sale, dump it in the woods illegally.
Right.
And you're not supposed to burn something on your property that didn't grow on your property.
You can burn yours, they say.
You can burn mine on my property, but I can't go burn mine. Those from your to my place.
And Forest Service gives people tickets that do that.
Yeah.
If you haul a bunch of stuff from your house over to my house, I go to burn it, they give me a ticket for burning your stuff.
Best if you got an old tire there or something.
Right.
But anyway, I hear a bit more of that. One time we were talking about, you know, putting in some scales out here at the incinerator. Mm-hmm. Do we have an old pair of scales that work?
I don't think we do.
I remember in a past board meeting that somebody was supposed to, or some meeting, maybe it was a staff meeting, somebody was supposed to be getting some prices on scale.
I think they're done about $30,000.
Yes. Also, the disc ball affair.
Is that what it was?
And about 30, 34, somewhere along the way.
What did they do with their old?
Pardon? Yeah. That was just a request to scale part. They already
you have to hire somebody to be at the incinerator. To do all that.
You have to have a manpower out of there, and you got to have a piece of equipment to unload and all that stuff. So I don't know. There's no easy solution to it.
I've had a contractor tell me, if y'all just tell me what I owe and y'all would get a set of scales, I'd be glad to pay. I mean, they're charging people. They're getting money out of it. They're making a living off of it. They just need a place to carry it. Right. Two different contractors that said, Jim, y'all would just set a fee and get a set of scales or whatever, and I believe the fee would pay for the scales in the long run.
Or we could start out charging by the trailer load.
Right.
And then we could get the money by the scales there.
And they're willing to pay. It's not like we're trying to throw some extra tax on them or something. They want to pay. They just want to pay. They don't want to carry green bills. They do not want to carry green bills.
I'd like for us to start with, you know, have somebody take a picture of the trailer and have a person sign. This trailer is 6 feet wide, 20 feet long, and 3 feet deep.
Right.
So you can calculate what how many cubic yards it's got. Mm-hmm. And we set a fee per yard. Mm-hmm. And you can take it out here and incinerate it. And to keep anybody from having to collect any money, these people can set up an account and they get a bill.
Right.
I mean, that's the way the landfill office. You have regular customers come in and set them a bill. But you might have to require them to put a deposit to start with.
I've got two trees now. Can I cut?
In the city, aren't you?
You in the city.
Why, I'll kill you, Joy.
I'll tell you what I
well,
that system, out in the incinerator, would make any difference if the tree came to the city or not.
That's better than on another account.
Than the fee.
And, I think there's a staff member out there full-time at the roll-off site for the most part, isn't it? Not the roll-off, but the recycle center, which is where the incinerator is.
Okay.
Okay. Enough on that.
You want to see that come back?
We'll bring that back next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
We'll bring that back next Tuesday.
No, I'm going to put this one off.
No, let's wait. We need a lot more discussion on this. Item number six, the board to discuss additional dockage for commercial crabbers to load and unload traps.
Our crabber didn't come, so can we table this till another workshop?
Sure can. Item number seven, the board to discuss road repair, maintenance, and drainage issues.
This is me. I really wanted to talk about, and I took Ted around last week at the beach and Steam Hatchie, and I know, especially during election time, we all have, everywhere we visit, people, you know, tell us about potholes and issues and road issues and needing the roads paved and, and needing roads fixed and
ditches cleaned out.
And my issue at the beach in Steam Hatchie is that, and I'm learning as I go, and I'm reminded that ditches generally are to keep water off the road. They're not to evacuate water from an area. However, in my areas at the beach and at Steam Hatchie, a great deal of those ditches are for stormwater runoff and to get rid of the stormwater. So my discussion is that every year I think it needs to be on a regular service by the road department before hurricane season comes, that those stormwater ditches, wherever they are in the county, should be addressed and cleaned. Now, I know that the stormwater runoff, it's beneficial that it be filtered. In other words, if there's cattails in the ditch and those kind of things, that filters the water before it goes into the ocean. And so I'm not suggesting that we go in with a grade awl and you know, skim back all the ditches and make it just clean the culverts. Some of the ditches have tires, limbs, trees, those kind of things. Things that, frankly, if we get the sheriff's crew, they can do a lot of those, that kind of stuff, because it's a manpower issue. Very seldom is it, other than at the culverts, is it a grade awl issue. But I just need, you know, I put in the same work orders that y'all do, the same system, and some of the stuff that I saw, you know, Commissioner Russell had put in, and they've gotten to them now. But so I know that the road department is under a great deal of pressure to keep up with everything that we're doing. I just need to say, for the benefit of District 3, that I'm in a unique situation. If I call them or send in an order about potholes, that is not that's a nuisance, unless it's bad enough, a washout or something. But there are some things that we need to address that, you know, will help to alleviate any further property damage from our people in the future. It's just a unique situation down there with some of the drainage and so forth. That's what I wanted to talk about and say, and I know that we will be meeting later on future road repairs and those kind of things. And my biggest issue with that, and I'll say it now, I'm going to say it again, is we need some transparency. We don't know. You don't know what's on all the list and what all, you know, dirt roads I have, and I don't know what all you have. And the public, you know, I've been called a liar in some of these meetings, you know, that no, that road can't be on the list. There's no way you're financing and, you know, identifying money 5 years down the road, you know. So I would like to see some transparency in these roads, not necessarily a priority list even, but transparency to show where a citizen can go on the website and look and see Steam Hatchie, River Road, has been designated in 2014 for scrap or whatever, and then a spreadsheet for any of the roads, and that the board has signed a resolution for that money, you know, and just a progress so people can go in and see the progress, and rather than we talked about a sign, that you know, the transparency that they can see that, you know, we do have a plan and we are working towards it, and it's just not all words.
And I've brought that up a lot since I've been here, and we recently put together, and it was shared with us, that was probably before you came on, because I had asked for the same thing, that it would be on our website, maybe posted here, so anybody could look at it at any time. And you've got ABC Road. It's been approved, and it's going to be paved in 2022, or it's in the design phase, or right. It's in the a bid process, or just whatever. So we still have that. We still have that going.
Sit in staff meetings that we go over the project with.
And you could go online and look at it. Yep. Is it posted online? It should be.
Okay.
So that anybody can look at it. Now, in terms of your problem with the ditches with stuff in, see, I know my district, and I know my district is different from yours, the coastal area, but a lot of mine is complaint driven, and people will call me and say this, that, and the other, and I'll say, okay, I will ask for this to be done,
right.
And then I turn it in. Like if there was a tree that was in the ditch that was going to stop the drainage or tires or whatever, then I don't know if you know it or not, but with culverts, and we have culverts that are stopped up, and that right there, again, a citizen has to request that. We don't have anybody going around routinely checking culverts and cleaning them out. It's complaint driven.
Well, mine is flood driven. I mean, we had all that rain, and then it backs up, and then it's just a negative. Go ahead.
I just think, you know.
Well, mine is different.
Ted and the road department on how, because your district's different from ours, but I do want to say one thing too, and I had asked for this to be added to the agenda tonight, and then we decided I'd just bring it up when you
okay,
had
sure.
yours. But, you know, last meeting I mentioned the process that we go about paving our roads, and the way it's been since I've been here since 2010 and before then is that the road paving money is split in half, and half goes, 50% goes in a pot, and then 50% is divided five ways, so you've got 10%. Which amounts to $30,000 or so a year, and you will never be here long enough to get anything significant done. So we've talked about it in the past to, you know, maybe combine that money and then let someone determine, you know, by our formula, which roads need to be on the list. Have a list. We need to all have a list. But it would go by, you know, how long the road is, how many houses are on there, what's the traffic count on there. And, you know, when we discussed it before, I didn't have enough of support that, you know, people didn't want to do that. But I feel like if we could put that money in a pot, we could see more paving. Because this, the way it is now, I don't think it's been very effective. Look at all the unpaved roads you have, and I have, and he has, and everybody else. And somehow or another, we've got to get to the point where we can take enough money to finish something, go to another one, and go to another one.
One thing we're going to have to do to stretch our money a little farther is take back up on some of the engineering that it takes. The standards we're going by is just more expensive than what we need. Common sense tells you. And I've heard it over and over for years, not just since I've been in office, but before that. It's a killer. And Joey Anderson himself stood right down on Highway 30 and told me, he said, Jim, y'all could get a lot more bang for your buck. And he said, you know, there's just a... there's no reason in having 60-foot right-of-ways and state standards as far as, he said, there are certain standards you could come back down on like other counties do in state and get a lot more bounty, get a lot more mile paid, is what he said.
Yeah.
And we need to research that and do some studying on that and see if we can't, you know, deserve to have the best for their money that they're paying out.
Yeah, I think so too, because, you know, my district joins at Madison County and Jefferson County. So I have been down in Madison County, and all the roads that they have paved out in the country, and then you get to Taylor County and the pavement stops. And again, they're at 10 mills in Madison County, and they financially, they, you know, they may be worse off than us, I don't know, but they sure have a lot of nice paved roads. And I'm thinking, how did they do that? How did they afford to do it? It may be
Joey told me how they do it. Their mile of road is a lot cheaper than our mile of road.
Yeah.
Because they don't do it to the standards and the width and the ditches and the covers like we do. I mean,
I just rode Jefferson County just yesterday. A little 2 mile section of the road just above Lamont connects 257 back to 19. And so it's old historic St. Augustine Road. And, you know, it's cut about 12 feet down in the Plain Hill. They just paved it last year. And it's probably an 18 foot wide asphalt road with a double stripe down the middle, about 6 feet on either side. Not a single cover on the whole 2 miles of road. And it'll last, it's a little country road, and it'll last for a long time. You probably could get 2 miles of that for what we think of 1 mile.
But, let, if I might.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got just the opposite issue. I agree with, you know, some of these, like Red Padgett Road, good gracious, that thing was engineered.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a lot of roads that haven't been engineered at all. There is no drainage. One that Commissioner Russell had put on, had milling put on, and the citizens are most appreciative. But now there's a crown on the road, and there's nowhere for water to go. We didn't engineer it, you know, and I have the money to engineer it, to have culvert, have drainage under the, you know, and culverts like they should be. And so now the water backs up on the people upstream. So those are, you know, we need a plan. For sure, but it needs to be engineered within reason. But we need to make sure we just don't lay down blacktop. We need to
good
drainage.
Yeah, the common sense in anything you do. If you're building a road on a hill and there's a slough down at the bottom of the hill down there, all this water going to run down the middle of the road if you don't have control where everybody driveway. But now, years ago, Vernon Johnson Road is a good example. It's a good paved road, and the fence is appear to that wall on both sides.
Yeah.
The way the standards are now, you couldn't pave that road. You couldn't pave the road to Deagle Beach now because you don't have enough place to dig ditches and put culverts. And I mean, you know, Cedar Island's got roads where you couldn't build now.
Right.
And we could get back to those type of projects and have enough engineering in it to make it common sense, but not overkill like the Red Page Road and Highway 30 right down here. Carlton Cemetery Road is a good example right now with overkill. It cost us a bunch of money to make a culvert to satisfy everybody. The culvert, the man already had a reducer he was going to put in the culvert. It cost us $30-something thousand just to get it up to state standards. And it didn't need it as far as I'm concerned. And in the same job, there was turnoff, like right here at the gun shop, wasn't even on the blueprints. I looked at the blueprints myself. They didn't even have turnout things. And, I mean, there's, you know, they could have spent that money and put some nice turnout lanes on that $30,000 right down the road in the turnout. Ben's head got all that straightened out. we got it straight as far as Mr. Anderson said he'd take care of the places that need to be wider, intersections, he'd take care of it, make sure the turnouts got done. And it wouldn't cost us nothing.
Yeah, they were good about that. I did talk to Kenneth about dirt roads, and he said we don't have to have a 60-foot right-of-way to do a dirt road. There are certain standards, certain, but the dirt road can be smaller than a 60-foot right-of-way. I talked to Jim, I think I've talked to some others about, we have a dirt road paving policy. And in that dirt road paving policy is basically two criteria, how many houses are on that road and your trip count. I worked with Kim to get a map, gave you a copy. I've got some smaller copies. I couldn't get bigger copies printed out in time for the meeting, but if you want another one of those or not, but that is sort of
I'll take the picture.
Well, I'm going to give you a bigger copy when I get them printed out. What you're looking at is, and you can't see it very well on this map, but these green dots are 911 addresses. And then you can see where they're clustered around your dirt roads. The dirt roads, I believe, are in blue. Once again, I will get bigger maps for everyone. But you see you've got clusters and steam hatches, of course, in other areas, and you're familiar with your district more so than I am. But,
yeah,
you know, in the county I previously worked, when I started, we have 900 miles of dirt roads. We have 900 miles of dirt roads. We're throwing up our hands. Oh, my God, how are we going to handle it? We handle it 1 mile at a time. You go after every bit of funding you can get. What we did was similar to this. We looked at where the houses are. We looked at where the dirt roads are, and those are our priorities. Go for the dirt roads where there are houses. So what I'm suggesting is let's kind of all work together, however how you want to do it. Identify some roads to put on a list, and let's give those roads to Kenneth, and let's start looking at, are those good roads to do? Is your drainage there? Is your base work there? Is your traffic count there? You certainly want to analyze your traffic count. Are these some good roads that we want to look at doing? And let's start. Maybe do some engineering work on these. I think engineering work needs to be done. I didn't like that approach where, oh my God, put some filling on the road without any thought to drainage or anything. You see what we've got now.
Yeah.
So when we do pick a dirt road, we give it to Kenneth, and let's go ahead and go out there and look at the drainage, right-of-way issues. Do we need a chain right-of-way? What's the baseline? What's the mileage? What's it going to cost us? He can give us estimates on these roads. This is going to be a $300,000 road, or is it going to be $1 million road? What's it going to cost us? And start getting some answers to some of the questions. And let's have a dirt road paving program, not a policy. Policy to me seems like we're regulating it. Let's have a program.
How did you fund it in Jackson?
We went after a lot of different fundings, and I talked to you about it, but I don't like ranking them number 1, 2, 3, because our top road that had been ranked years before I started, it was maybe 5 mile road. It's going to have a lot of engineering work on it. We right away got some CDBG low income money. We did 12 roads right away that were low on our list. I don't know if that program still exists. I'll check into it. But CDBG, if there were a lot of low-income residents living on the road, we could get some money to do neighborhood improvements.
Oh, no. So
that's something we could look
that's
into.
Something we need to look at.
I remember another road we did. I don't know if the CP program exists, but it was to take traffic off two key state roads. We got some money to do that. We borrowed money, too. We did a $10 million loan. It wasn't a bond issue, it was a loan. As we paid that off, we got $7 million into paying it off. We borrowed some more money. That's what they wanted to do. So a lot of different ways that we did it.
They borrowed some money to build up.
They borrowed some money, and they had a couple other revenue sources that you don't have here. So we had a little bit more money to deal with.
Yeah. Getting back to Mr. Fiegel's earlier comment about and all the little paying the money and putting in one big pot, I had nothing. And that would help. Some, but if you take $60,000 times five, you're not losing but $300,000, but that's more than $30,000. And in Madison County, they're 10 mills, but they collect a lot more gas tax money than we do because they've got Interstate 10 of it.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Same with Jefferson County, the intersection there.
I gotta go right on the road.
All right, yeah.
I'll see y'all later.
All right.
Okay, bye. We had about $1 million landfill host fee that you don't have here because we have a landfill in the county. And we also collect about $1 million from a utility right-of-way use fee. You could implement that, but I don't know if you've got the desire to do so or not, but Washington County just put that in place. So we had a couple of other revenue sources that you can't, you're not utilizing, or you can't utilize.
Well, I want us to do something that we can start getting some results with paving roads, because since I've been here for 8 years, we've not, even if you put all the districts together, we've not done that much. Most of what we've done has been resurfacing, which has been funded by scrap and stop. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just our gas tax money, we've been able to do very little paving, and we all have people. And especially the ones of us that are out campaigning, I mean, everybody that lives on the Line Rock Road, Dirt Road, they want it paved.
They're dying. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'll turn out all mine that's got people on it, and then that whoever's going to do this evaluation, then start from there. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't pick two, because I've got people on many roads that's, you know, really requesting that I pave their road. And
Well, I mean, I was suggesting the number because he only has so much time to go out and look and do an analysis. But
can I ask him the one tax money? I mean, that's our money, or that we split it up, the $30,000 that we get. Can that be put in a sinking fund, be carried over to the next year, like you do boat ramps?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I thought you spent it every year.
Well, you spent it every year.
Well, I had mine spent for me and didn't know it was spent.
Right.
So that's the reason I have requested. I'd like to get a report. I haven't got it, but I'd like to get a report of how my money is spent in my district. Because I had, like, you know, maybe one time I had $60,000-something, and the next time we talked about it, mine was down to nothing. I'm like, what happened to my money? I didn't spend it.
I believe I saw something on that. It was on the Osceola Road. Did you get down there yourself? A lot of people used
that. All right.
Yeah, but before that, though, I asked. I said, well, you know, when we certain things that were taken out of mine that I didn't know you took out of individual accounts. You know, I thought I had to authorize it, but that's not the way it works. Right.
I don't know. There's certain maintenance they do, like going and fixing holes in the road and stuff. They charge so much time for that. You know.
Yeah, well, cover if you get a cover now. I didn't know it was coming out of my money.
Right. In your district, I think it comes out of your own time.
You got to have somewhere to charge it to. You know?
I thought that come out of the pot, not mine.
Right. Got that many pots, Ronnie?
What you got there?
So,
half road is one. If I don't get half road paved, I'm leaving out of town.
No, you're not leaving. We're gonna do it.
it's a scrap or scop.
Yeah,
it's
coming.
Yeah, and those scrap and scop programs are vital for. Yeah,
well, we want to see those and their progress where they are, and things on the website where we can go on, and our citizens can see. We want that transparency.
That's exactly right, and also the scrap and scop resurfacing. You know, we all submit, but I've got roads in my district that are not on the list that are crumbling. Yeah. And there's so many ahead of those. Mm-hmm. There won't even be a road there by the time we get money from Scrap and Scop to do that. I don't know what the answer is to that, but I know the rest of y'all too. You've got crumbling roads, which I asked Street down here, crumbling. Mm-hmm. People ask me about that every day almost, and only thing I can say, it's on the list. Well, they're tired of hearing it's on the list, because they've been told it's on the list until we wore that one out.
It's like the Plantation Road down here. It's getting real bad, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Which one, Gina?
And that's terrible.
It's
like the world of traffic.
It's too narrow. You go around that curve, you're going to be run off.
Yeah. That's right.
It needs to be widened.
It needs to be widened.
So we got a lot of needs. We need to figure out how to get some money without raising taxes.
We sure do.
Of course, it comes out of the gas tax.
Is that the only way we can do a road through gas tax money?
No.
Yeah.
No, we've got to buy one.
That's not the only way you do a road. You can use it like, you can utilize other funds. You could borrow money.
No, didn't I hear somebody say we could use some Restore Act money on roads if we...
You might be able to, as long as you're within 25 miles.
25 miles. That should help.
That'll help all mine.
Yeah. I think they'd find an angle they play in to access the coast, because that's how we promoted our projects.
Sure.
Improved access to the coast. So there's going to be some money coming, we hope, soon. So.
Well, I just tell you that we, and it's your district, so mm-hmm. you'll be able to do what I'm assuming you want to do. But we've talked a lot about trying to straighten out Dead Man's Curve some. And I hope that you'll keep
that. I thought that was already decided. We were going to do that.
No,
we
got
it. I just don't want you to forget because I lost my mother and my aunt there and plenty of other people. And there'll be other people.
Kenneth's done a drawing now.
It's on our project list.
It's on our project list.
And we got to the final cut in the state budget. We got vetoed by GovStop. The very end. It was actually...
Well, I know him. I'll call him.
Who's that?
He can't be talking next year.
You tell me green dots is what on here is unpaved road?
No, green dots are houses.
911.
The yellow one, yeah.
So how does the rest of the board feel about the process of how we fund these paving our roads? Are y'all wanting to keep your little money in your account, or are you willing to, let's pull it and see if we can really get something done?
The only thing, I'm fine with putting it all in one fund, what are we going to do, draw straws, see who wrote
it? Exactly.
Well, it needs to be fair and equitable, but we talked about how much traffic was on it, how many houses were on it. We really need to look at the condition of the, right. But...
Industrial Drive is a good example. That's one of the most used roads in the county right there, Industrial Drive, about 4
o'clock
for Hall, about airport. It's just bad shape, and it's just people back and forth. If you did a count right there, it'd be high enough. I mean,
That
would be very high.
But that's a scrap Scott deal, isn't it?
Yeah,
right.
We got dirt roads.
Got them $30,000 we get from the gas that keeps on.
It's a connector road. Yeah, it would be. Yeah. But that, you got roads like that, and just like, you know, Plantation, there, that's a connector road. It goes from, that's a 27 to 19 connector, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's roads like that that really, I wouldn't want to die them, you know, to do something else that people, you know, been living on dirt. And some people complain about getting the road paved. I don't know if y'all ever heard that, but they don't want that road paved in front of the house.
Yeah, I heard that one.
That people speed up. A highway patrolman told me one time, he said, I make all my tickets on new asphalt. He said, when they pave a road, that's where everybody speeds. He said, that's where you make hit their boss will tell them, such and such road, got to just repave, y'all work that road because that's where you're going to make your money. He said, people can't stand it. It looks good. It's got new stripes on it. They all go faster than
anybody.
I said, never thought about it that way. He said, that's where they make a lot of their people.
But the one thing that I want to have assurance is that whoever's making these decisions, maybe they don't like you. Maybe they didn't get enough raise that year and they don't plan it on you or me or whoever. And then we'll put their road. And I hate to think that happens, but it could.
Oh, yeah.
And so I want it some kind of process.
You're running for re-election. You've seen the booger behind every tree.
That's right. I'm going to politics with
you. That's politics. Coming out now.
Well, I mean, I'd like to have y'all look at this. I'll get you bigger maps, sir.
Yeah, please do.
And let's look at getting some votes on
You could make a bigger map just by doing it by
your individual district.
By individual district, and then you could zoom in on
your district. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just your district.
You've got the whole.
If it was just my district, I could feel a lot better.
That's
okay. All right. I want transparency.
I want my transparency too, so in case you pay more over there than you did in mine, I want to
stuff. Okay.
Anyway, we got 250 miles of dirt roads and 251 miles of basically paved roads.
Okay, now that 250 miles of dirt roads, is that just roads that
people live on or something, or is that like the dead end roads that we talked about?
That's everything.
And we want to eliminate the.
You want to eliminate it. We don't know the roads that are just like through woods that.
And that's,
I don't know if you'll ever do those.
And that's county roads.
Yes.
Not.
Right.
Four River roads, you know.
Okay. Yes.
Which we used to include those.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got much less number to deal with.
Okay.
Okay. Shoot, we that.
There's some roads at Four Rivers. Runs through Four Rivers. Nobody lives on it. We could drop off the scale. I mean, that's something, you know. We could give up like Four Rivers, and that would save us a lot of maintenance on them. One road. I think I checked in one. They used $50,000 worth of iron rock labor on one road in 1 year. You know. It was wet, and they were logging on it, and it was a mess.
And I remember that I gave for that road, so Mr. Fiegel, we gave $20,000 a piece or $10,000 a piece to buy some other rocks.
We did. We gave a lot. I put all my money into it that year, but that's a road right there that I don't think we could do anything with that road. We've got too many people using that road.
You know, that was one of the hard things. We didn't buy road Jackson County. We should give back, and the board never would do it.
Yeah, I mean that's just too many people that use that road.
Somebody would always come up with a reason, and I go down and go whatever, and the board would never.
Yeah. Are we through talking about roads?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I wanted to talk about mosquito control.
Yeah.
I'm sure all of y'all are getting all the calls that I'm getting, and here's what I want to say. I had a person call me today, and he said that he has called mosquito control, and he's left voice messages, and he's left another one again today, and nobody's returning his call. Nobody's been spraying his area, and I had a couple areas of people to tell me that. I had someone else that called me today and said that the driver is flying down the road, that there's no way that he could be getting proper spraying as fast as the truck is going. I haven't heard that before, but it's something that we need to address. People in Osceola, the Wilder Creek area, James Smith Road, Lyman Hendrick, just pretty much everywhere. And I'm out campaigning and at people's doors, and you're probably running into this too. You can hardly stand there and talk to people. The mosquitoes are so bad. And with the health, I think it's a health hazard, is particularly since we've had an incident here in Fayette County.
This is some information I'm going to give you in just a second, so it works.
Let me take a break. Go ahead.
I know that the reports that, some of the reports that I've been getting said, oh, we didn't spray because we didn't have a driver. We mentioned this last time. If we need drivers, let's advertise and get drivers. So, you know, it's to not be able to spray and protect the public because we don't have a driver, we have to do something there.
It's in the paper this week.
The other thing that I really want to see, if there's any money anywhere where we could do an aerial spray. I think that we're at that point that it's so bad with all the rain that we've had. If we could identify funding for an aerial spray, and I know it's a lot of money, but we did that about 4 or 5 years ago.
2012.
And, huh?
2012.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, it really helped. And then the next year, and all, it wasn't as bad. Of course, we didn't have the water that we've got. But somehow or another, we've got to get a.
Let me share this information with you. This is from Cheryl, mosquito control coordinator. Says it's LaWanda. Unfortunately, we do have a confirmed human case of eastern equine encephalitis in the county. We'll be spraying at full capacity, and I'm checking on what other resources the state can add to assist us with this. I have the attached plan for next week, weather permitting. I will change this week's plan as attached to spray the beaches, Cedar Island, tomorrow night. I've not confirmed drivers yet on any plans for next week. We may have to pull from the road department. I'll keep you informed of any other information we receive.
Well, instead of paying overtime, why don't we run ads to try to get drivers?
Yeah.
Huh?
They are. They're in the paper today.
Currently advertising.
It was in the paper this week, overtime for drivers.
Is part of the problem the starting pay? Or?
Yeah.
Well, we've heard that in the past, yeah.
Is it $8 and some odd cents?
$8.05.
Something like that.
So we had people to inquire about it, and when they were told to pay, they said no, thank you. Is that it? Or are we just assuming it's the pay?
Probably just assumption.
I think it's an assumption. Yeah. I mean, we've heard from current employees who say it would, or our seasonal drivers that say, well, we would have more people if you paid more, but those people haven't stepped forward. So it's an assumption.
How old do you have to be to drive a mosquito truck?
Well, you have to be 18.
18.
But you have to have a high school diploma too, and that's
why.
Because that's our personnel rules.
But we can change that. Why do you have to have a high school diploma to drive a truck and spray out the back of it?
I'll ask the same thing myself.
No, I don't think that makes any sense. I mean, you got to have a high school diploma to drive a spray truck?
That's to work for the county, you do.
Huh?
To work for the county, you do.
Well, then we need to change that. If we need mosquito drivers, then let's change it so we can hire them. I don't care if they got a high school or not. If they got a driver's license, can drive a truck.
I think it was last year I had one of the drivers talk to me extensively about the fact they couldn't get enough drivers. And her pitch was, you don't pay enough. Who wants to go out here and drive a truck at night in dark places and yards for $8 an hour? And I asked her, I said, why are you doing it? She said, well, I just like to do it. It supplements my income and my other job. Yeah. But her pitch was, you need to do something for their salary if you want to attract drivers. And I can't argue with that.
Log truckers have the same problem getting drivers.
Yeah, they are. Well, long haul drivers are too, all of them are. But as far as the high school diploma, that's an HR issue. That may be, a liability issue, but that was.
I don't know, we can check on it.
Yeah, maybe
you'd have to talk to the insurance company about.
Maybe. Yeah.
Why would the insurance company say you got to have a high school diploma?
I don't know. What I'm saying is that might be the way they come up with that, put through the insurance. I don't know. We'll check it though. For sure.
I'm sure there's some paperwork that you have to do, and you probably want somebody to fill out the reports.
Yeah.
The mileage and all that. Sure.
I'm just wondering about the chemical you're dealing with. Is it perfectly safe?
I will say, I don't know what I missed when I was. I've had more calls from Skinners in the last month so than I have anything else, or all the rest of the calls from. Combined. And I call from my house, and every time a citizen calls me, I call and leave a message. See, I'm calling for Jim Moody, and he lives on Pottsdale Road or wherever, and he's got a mosquito problem. And of course, I tell him who I am, and I've never gotten a call back. And I told, after about the third call, from this one gentleman, I gave him the number. I said, you try calling mosquito control.
I don't believe the practice is to return calls. Mm-hmm. I believe the purpose of that number is for people to call in so our employees can record, where the most complaints are, or they can request service. But well, I could see where it would take a lot of time
to call back.
To call every person back. And especially if we really, I don't know that they can predict, except for a week at a time, when they're going to complete those missions.
Well, then the key that he's read in there from Cheryl, she had permission from the state. That's the reason you have to call. You either have to have counts, mm-hmm. numbers, or complaints mm-hmm. before they can spray, or they're not going to spray if there doesn't seem to be a problem there. And that's the requirement that Department of Agriculture puts on. I remember that. Right. And that's what she said she had the go-ahead of the state to get on a regular cycle.
Yeah. I've got a suggestion then. Why can't we, the number that they call, when it's answered, this is mosquito control. This week, we're spraying this area, and this area, and this area. And that way, whoever calls they'll know if there are areas on the list. And then at the end, if you have any further questions, please leave your name and number and we'll get back with you. And it might be that the first recording part would answer everything they wanted. But they're saying they called and they've called for more than, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. Nobody's been out here and they think they're being ignored.
I understand that. And I think the only issue with trying, you know, telling somebody we're going to spray there this week is if the driver calls in sick or if it's windy or if it's raining, they can't spray. So I don't know if people would be more unhappy if we said we are spraying XYZ this week and then we didn't because it rained or it was windy or somebody called in or whatever. So it seems like this can vary from day to day of what we're able to accomplish because a lot of it's contingent upon the weather.
Well, and maybe that's why we need to see if we've got any kind of funding where we can do an aerial spray. Let's go ahead and knock them out, and then in the meantime, maybe we can get some drivers and then try to routinely spray as much as we can after the aerial spray to keep them down.
And I don't know, I mean, we have 2 cases of AAA, one human and one equine right now. I don't know at what point the state could assist us with aerial spraying. I mean, I think these are all things that we're trying to work through. To see if we can get some
help. Well, there has to be a count to identify the worst areas, if you remember that night, we did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would assume, you know, I mean, we've identified it's one mosquito, one type strain of mosquito.
Right.
Ag should be helping us with trapping and counting those in the areas. I mean, it's 2 separate issues. I know that the AAA and bad mosquitoes, a lot of mosquitoes, that's 2 separate issues.
But I see what you're saying. Maybe if data was gathered, that would support an aerial spray.
And you know, Cheryl could do that if she's got, you know, time or get some help.
Well, I mean, the Department of Health is working on it as well.
Okay.
Y'all remember what triggered the aerial spraying last time?
It was a tropical storm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a declared disaster, a FEMA disaster, and a region-wide issue. There were several other counties. We went ahead and did it, and the Department of Agriculture just had a hard time with it. But if the other counties finally called up, and we got reimbursed, it was $120,000+. We did get, you know, the 87% reimbursement. But it was a declared disaster. It was after a tropical storm where we had like 20 inches.
Is that all it was? I thought it was the $300,000-$400,000.
Yeah,
you sure about that?
For sure.
Because that's what I've been telling people. It's about $400,000.
But it probably would be now.
Yeah. I gauged it on the deer in the woods. You can go down there this afternoon, right now, and you can see deer laying in the road on the grave. And the reason they laid in that road, they can't stay in the woods. You ride down and they run off in the bushes, you can look rear view mirror, they run back up on the road. And the last time they sprayed, they were like that. And that's what I've gauged. Mosquitoes are about to the point where they were that time.
You have to get a declaration from the Department of Health saying it's an epidemic. And the epidemic can be, you know, that people are sick or people are, you know, people, our spraying can't keep up with it. And, I mean, there's a criteria for it, and it's something that, you know, Cheryl can start checking on with the Department of Agriculture and move in case we...
And they change the spray. It doesn't do like it used to do. It doesn't kill them like it used to, what they tell me. They say that, you know, they've weakened it down with certain chemicals now that they can't spray what they used to spray. You know, like when we were all young when they come by,
oh, you're talking about our truck. That's right.
The whole thing changed to the point. Just educating the people to pour the water out of the 5-gallon buckets in their yard really helped.
Yeah, but you go out in Wild Creek, you go down to Nut All Rise, and you go to Austin and all those places, when there's water standing everywhere. And there's, I mean, we almost
You've got to have some air spraying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just underwater everywhere.
Well, at least we've got enough rain that some of it's run off. As long as you've got it moving, you know, it helps. But, you know, once it gets to the point where it quits raining, that's when you're going to be real bad.
Yeah. Well, I got several calls today about mosquitoes. And everywhere I go, I mean, it's a big,
you know. I would suggest that we, you know, my view is let the full force get out and start doing their job, and or, you know, even if we have to move the other drivers and continue to work on the criteria for
aerial
to, you know, well, if the other doesn't work.
Let me ask this question for not cutting you off here. About 2 years ago, we bought some extra mosquito spraying equipment, trucks. Are we got trucks idle out there in the London? They're not being used because we don't have drivers for them. We used to have two trucks, now we got four.
Well, I guess that's a possibility if we don't have enough drivers. I can check on the number of trucks that we have, but anytime we don't have enough drivers, I think
on a good night when it's not windy and it's not raining and it's ideal for spraying, we need every piece of equipment we got out here doing its thing.
Right.
If we got four trucks, let's be in.
I think actually we must have three, because Cheryl's email said that we would have three drivers every night. So, but I'll double check.
If you remember during the Zika, that mosquito was a daytime mosquito.
Yeah.
I don't know what this one is, but they got a grant and got the backpack sprayers where they could go around, you know, communities like a trailer park or whatever and spray. So there are those other resources they probably have that may be applicable too for the more congested areas, you know, wouldn't work probably out in the
As far as them not getting that answer on the phone, I quizzed them about that out there. I mean, I asked what the issue was with the phone business. It only gets so many calls and then it deletes them. That's what they said. It only does so many calls and it deletes the calls and starts over.
Calls.
And,
no wonder they're not even getting the calls.
Well,
they've reported that they get the spray and they're not even getting the message.
Animal control.
That needs to be fixed.
Wait, that's what that was told to me now. That's one of the people that's out there told me that. I asked a question and they said there's so many, you know, they get so many calls that they just, the phone can't keep them off.
That's something that I would expect. If we have an employee that knows that people are calling and they know that their message is being deleted, they would have already reported that to you. Hey, Ted. That should be reported to you. It shouldn't have to come through citizens that nobody's answering my calls. Nobody's spraying in my yard, so.
First I've heard of it.
But you would think we'd be heard right now.
Y'all put yourself in the position of a commissioner. You got citizens that call over and over and over, and you try to tell them. I called, left your name, you called. 838-3539. It's the only number I can remember now. And they call back and you say, now look, we can't spray if it's raining. I mean, it's raining almost every day. We can't spray if it's windy. And it's embarrassing to have to, the people think you aren't trying to help them.
I hate it when people tell you all the stuff that
you're doing. Yeah, they know he's lying, he's doing his job. Old Star Commission, we need to boom him out.
Excuses.
Let's face it.
One time, somebody kept calling. They called me in Pam District down there. So I brought it up to Dustin Hempel. So he got them to go down there and check them people. They called so many times, they went down. And if there was one, there was at least 25 buckets, wheelbars, old boats, everything in that yard there that was holding water. And I mean, they had called every day about the mosquitoes, but there was at least 25 places on their property right there, not all rise, that was raising mosquitoes. And they just kept calling and kept calling, aggravating Dustin Hempel and Gary. I think he said they were aggravating them every day. And but they were, and once it, what they went down and inspected, Gary, I think he sent Gary down and they inspected it. It was just unreal what they found, you know, in the people's yard. And I remember that story, and it's always stuck in my craw. You know, somebody called me and said, "Have you got anything in your yard holding water?" That's the first thing I asked them. And I tell them about them being able to go get the tablets to throw in the ponds in their yard. You know, if they got a pond out there in the field right by the house, they can take one of the tablets and throw out there. And that'll eliminate a lot of them raising the nest. You know, that's what I tell them when they call me. And then I've offered to go get the tablets and bring to them. You know, and I have done that in a couple of cases.
Who got the tablets?
They got them out there on the side on at 98 there. Gary's office out there. The last time they did, I'm not sure if that's
they got a few. They don't have the bulk like they had when we were in it. And they probably, I don't know that she has the budget to do it now. Maybe we need to find her some money.
They used to have a bunch of them. I don't know if they got them this year or not. They used to have them.
Some of the places that I've seen, that I'm seeing now, a tablet, I mean, it's a large area. I mean,
it'd take a lot of tablets.
Thousands of tablets. I mean, that would not do it. If it's a little bird bath or a little something pond or something, yeah, but when you've got big mass areas. I had one man that called me this morning right after 8 o'clock, and he was complaining that, you know, he had called and called and nobody had responded, nobody's been out there. And he said, "I'll tell y'all, y'all take that some of that money y'all using on that building, you're building out there, and put it into mosquito spraying." And so I had to try to, you know, calm him down with that and explain things. But people think that, I mean, a lot of people don't understand, but we should be able to get back with people. And but that if they're calling and the phone is deleting their message, then we have to fix that tomorrow.
Well, we fixed mosquitoes. What else we got?
That's all I've got. You got anything?
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
I go around by the airport and I see a building to the right of the airport. And I see a truck in there, and it looks like I see prisons or something going in there. What is that down there?
That's the projects. That's Danny O'Quinn and our project
inmates.
Coordinator, and that's the paid inmate crew. He works them, and they do our projects for us. And that's where they're headquartered.
The building with the tower in?
Yeah.
It's the Cap building. They call it the Cap building.
Yeah.
Anything else? Anybody else got anything else before we go? All right, I'm starting. Let's go.
Well, that's something.